what happened there? I'm playing on the radio again, I guess. Very sensitive touchscreen. Good evening. Welcome. Glad you're with me. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Yes, we got a technical glitch right out of the box. That's how we like it. So now it's out of the way. 3 hours of radio irreverence coming your way. Karen Conti will be here, of course, after 8 o'clock. Rest of the show, always more fun when you are involved. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get a hold of us when you call in. You'll be talking to Cody. I'm leaving for a month. Goff, he's the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. And, yes, he is abandoning us for 4 weeks. What will we do? Probably cancel the show. Never. We'll be here. Cody will be not. We are going to steal Dave Plyer's producer. Joey Gelman's going to join us for 4 weeks. That'll be fun. So Joey is in shadowing Cody. I don't know what he's going to see in there. I always question what happens on the other side of the glass. But Cody's here tonight, so you call in, you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. You know the deal. If you'd like to keep up with us on social media, Facebook and Twitter, it's Brian Noonan Show. That's Noonan with an A. Some people misspell it. I don't know why, but they do. So after 6:30, we're going to check in with Alex Stone, who has been in Dallas for ABC News. He's going to give us an update on the latest. And then we want to talk to you, because a lot's been going on in this country. We know that. We've got police shootings. We've got protesters. We've got police officers being shot, which is unbelievable to me. If you have kids, whether they're young, whether they're teenagers, we're going to talk a little bit about how you discuss these things with them. What have you been telling your kids? Have your kids been asking you questions? And do you see that they're being affected by this? So we'll talk about that after 6:30. And then an algorithm claims that it can help us spot lies in dating apps and emails. So we'll get into that as well. A whole lot more to get to. Roger, how are you? We haven't seen you in a while. Did you have a nice holiday?
Yeah, I had a busy holiday.
Yes, you were doing some sort of parade.
Yeah.
As always.
A lot of people were invited, and a lot of people came. They showed up and had a blast. Catherine Johns was there, and the guy from Two Broke Gals or Girls or
Two Broke Girls, I believe,
is girls,
the,
thank you.
The show on CBS. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah,
it's Two Broke Girls. Two Broke Gals.
Well, gals, girls,
Buffalo
I don't
Gal.
Know.
Won't you come out tonight?
Right, yeah.
Sure.
And then we had Christian Farr and his wife. Christian's on 5 and his wife's on 7.
Is that right?
I am woefully lacking
in my knowledge of local TV reporters.
Well, it gets confusing because I walked up to him. I says, how does it feel having, a two family broadcast group, basically, unto themselves? And he says, oh, it's actually 3 because Bob Jordan is her father.
Holy smokes.
And so he wasn't in the parade, but he was watching the parade, and they posted a picture of him and watching the parade, and so it was nice. And I'm trying to think.
Now you're back and ready to go.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah,
excellent. And everything else is going along okay.
Everything's slowly getting back to what it needs to get back to, and we're taking care of business. And again, my deepest thanks to you. And,
I didn't bring it up for that, but
well,
and there's
I understand,
no need to thank
but,
me.
But it meant a lot, and we move on.
Yeah, it's always tough, but we're glad you're back and glad you're starting to move a little bit toward normalcy, which it takes a while.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that, so good to have you back.
Thanks.
Cody and I were pitted against each other in an epic battle last night.
Yeah, I saw
it
that.
Yes, if you haven't seen it, you can see the video on the WGN radio page. Right? On Facebook. You can see it on our page on Facebook. I know it's at WGN Plus on the website. It's all over. But last night, we had the pleasure of going to the Irish American Heritage Center for Irish Fest. And they had a King of the Kilt contest. So it was originally billed as Men in Kilts. And it was going to be, it's open to anybody who has a kilt. So I was going to enter it. And then Cody said, well, I'm off that night. I'll do it. So he was coming up to do it as well. I thought it was broken down into age brackets, which I guess it was supposed to be. But how many participants were there, Cody? 5 total?
5, yeah.
5, which doesn't make sense because there were more than 5 guys in kilts running around that joint yesterday.
Yeah, some looked really good. I don't know what was up.
I know. Well, there was that one guy. I'm glad he didn't get in the contest. Some wacky millennial in a kilt who had done like crazy colors in his hair, and he was wearing mismatched. He looked like a kilt-wearing guy from a Fish concert or something. He was out of his mind. Like he had done a few shrooms and had gotten dressed and didn't wear the kilt because it was Irish Fest, just wore the kilt because it was the only thing he had on the floor of his apartment. So it was Cody and myself, a 6-year-old boy. Was he 5 or 6? I think he was six. 6-year-old boy. Another gentleman who was probably a few years older than me in a pirate shirt. It looked like a pirate shirt. I guess it was a Highlander shirt. But he was wearing, he had gone crazy kilt. He had gone with the Highlander or pirate shirt, the really nice wool kilt with the belt and a hip flask and everything else, and then flip-flops. So he was kind of melding the look and feel of, yes, I'm at a summer festival, but I am going to go traditional kilt.
Do you think he cut off anybody's head in that Highlander shirt?
He did look like the Highlander, though, didn't he?
The Highlander.
Yes, that is what you call it, the Highlander
uh-huh.
shirt. Because it had the leather laces and the poofy sleeves. Not poofy like the pirate shirt that Seinfeld wore in that one episode, but poofy enough where I like the look of it, but I don't think I could pull it off.
I did notice there was only one of him.
Oh, sure. Well, there can be only one.
That's true.
When you're the guy with the Highlander shirt, there could be only one of you at a festival. And then I had on my kilt with the traditional footwear when you wear a kilt, some Asics running shoes, because my feet hurt. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to wear some uncomfortable shoes at a festival. But I had on the socks and then just a T-shirt and my Sporin, which is the little purse that hangs in front. And Cody had on his big wool kilt and a bagpiper T-shirt and some traditional socks. And, you know, again, we weren't wearing the traditional footwear, but we were dressed for comfort. So the contest starts, Then there was Jeff.
The old guy?
Yeah. Well, that's you calling him an
old gentleman.
He was a 72-year-old man in full kilt tuxedo.
Ooh.
Everything. The
like
rabbit.
A James Bond kind of thing.
Unbelievable. Like he had just come from either being the maitre d' at a Scottish restaurant,
mm-hmm.
or he wears this ensemble everywhere because he looked fantastic.
He did vaguely resemble old Sean Connery, actually.
Yes, yes. A little shorter.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did have an older Sean Connery look.
Mm-hmm.
Gray hair, the beard. He had a rabbit fur sporran. He had the traditional shoes that kind of lace up your leg. The bow tie, the whole nine, the epaulets on the tuxedo jacket, he was dressed. And I immediately thought, it's going to come down to the little kid and the 72-year-old man. That's what's going to happen. The rest of us are going to be out of it. So originally it was going to be, they were going to have three different age brackets, 17 and under, 17 to 35, and 35 and older. But with the overwhelming turnout for the Men in Kilts contest, they decided they were going to do the under 17 and over 17. Pretty easy win for the kid. I'm not going to give him a lot of props because he ran unopposed. But he won anyway. Good for him. He moves on to the finals. Then it's time to judge the older group. And I will tell you what happened there on the other side. But first, we must do this on WGN. I play this music because the rest of our story turns quite odd. If you're just joining us, welcome. We're talking about Cody and I competing for the King of the Kilt contest last night at the Irish American Heritage Center and the wonderful Irish Fest. So it comes down to the over 17 group, and it's Cody, myself, Pirate Joe, we'll call him, the Highlander, and then Jeff, the 72-year-old gentleman in the full kilt tuxedo. So they made us do a number of things, and you can watch the video, it's much funnier, but you know, the king is strong, so you gotta show how strong you are, rescue a damsel, show us your best pose and all that. And as you can imagine, Cody and I are working the crowd, cause that's what we do. We're trying hard, we're milking it. So it comes down, they're gonna do applause. And they start with the Highlander, and he gets a smattering of applause. Would you say that's fair, Cody?
Smattering? I would say there's a fair smattering.
Smattering. Then we come to Jeff, the 72-year-old gentleman. And now, a lot of times at the Irish American Heritage Center, the crowd skews a little older. In this room, I would say that was an accurate portrayal of the crowd, skewing a little bit older. They go crazy for Jeff. As they should, again, his outfit was on point. So they go crazy. Then they come to me. Well, I'm not going to be outdone. I don't care how good this guy looks in his Sean Connery tuxedo. I'm going. So I throw a little skin out. Lift the kilt a little bit, show some legs. Boom. I get. Would you say more than it? Well, much more than a smattering.
Yeah, I would say.
Pretty good. Pretty good round of applause. And I only had three people in the crowd. It wasn't like I stacked the crowd for myself. My wife, my brother, and sister-in-law were there.
Although they were in the front table.
But everybody else was strangers. There was Don't listen. I know why you're getting a little persnickety.
I'm just saying, Team Noonan, a little closer to the
judges.
There were
three people.
Mm-hmm.
Three.
But in the front.
Well, there was. It was still loud enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they come to Cody. Again, a polite smattering. Is that fair?
It was like a golf clap.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't even a polite.
It was like a golf. But it was
very polite.
It was like a golf clap at a video game speedrun marathon. Not at a golf course. So a little more than a.
Okay. Yeah. That was. So then they said, "Oh, well, now it's come down to a tie. We don't know." So Cody's out, and the Highlander is out, and now it's me, and now I'm gonna me and the old man. And I figure I gotta take this guy down, even though he's got the better outfit. Because he told me at one point, I said, "Man, that bow tie is gonna win." He goes, "Yeah, maybe next time you wear a shirt with a collar." And I was like, "Oh well, now you're going down, Gramps. I'm doing whatever it takes." Well, long story short, Jeff beat me. not by a lot, though. There was a good Cody. I had a pretty good representation.
You had a pretty.
If you go to the tape, it was close. But even I had to admit, because here's the thing. When they were asking for applause for Jeff, there were senior citizens who the rest of the day were going around on Rascal scooters who were standing up at the table screaming. Like Jeff held the cure to osteoarthritis. He was going to save them from their misery. They cheered for Jeff, and when they held their hand over me, these people sat down like I had just taken Medicaid and Medicare and every other social service away from everyone. They actually crossed their arms and stared at me as if to say, "Listen, you young whippersnapper, there's no way you're beating Jeff in this men in kilts contest." Again, would that be accurate?
I thought I saw one of them pull out a shillelagh, and they were
coming
ready.
At me. They were going to bludgeon me had I beat him. So anyway, Jeff beats me. His wife runs up and kisses him. Like he had, I don't know, like he had just won the Indianapolis 500. I poured a quart of milk on him since that was the vibe we were in. He didn't like that. But then I walked over to him and he goes, "Well, I'm not kissing you." And I was like, "Well, how about a hug?" So we hugged it out because I'm not a sore loser. I know when I'm beat. But then it comes down to Jeff and the little kid. Now, this is a hard one because you got a little kid and you got an old man. Both demographics can easily sway a crowd. And I'm like, well, who's going to, you know, how's this going to work out? If I'm the old man, I got to back down and let the kid win. But not Jeff, because he's all drunk with power now. He feels the burden of everyone over 65 on his shoulders, and his kilt-exposed knees are starting to buckle under that pressure. So Jeff milks it for all it's worth and destroys this little kid. I felt bad for the kid, but he learned a lesson early. You go up against an old man in a full tux, you're in a lot of trouble. Maybe we can get into this more later. Because then he was like, "Hey, where's so-and-so? Where's the kid?" And I go, "Well, he's gone because you crushed his dreams." And Jeff just looked at me again like I was the most horrible human being in the world. After I congratulated him again, I'm like, "Yeah, you crushed his dreams."
Did you say that to him?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah. Listen, what? I had a few Guinness.
I guess.
I said it in a lighthearted way.
Oh, sure.
But I don't know if he took it that way.
Probably. It sounds like Jeff stacked the crowd, I think. I think he brought in a couple of busloads.
He may have. I did notice a couple vans.
Yeah.
And I
see.
You know, so, but listen, he wanted it. He got his sash and he got to wear his crown. And Cody and I got felt up by numerous women. This is what I want to bring up, ladies, because I don't diminish the struggles that you go through and the harassment that you can feel at work and on the street and the horrible way men will behave towards you at some points. Cody and I were victims of this yesterday and felt it. And I'm not exaggerating. There was one woman who Cody estimated her to be mid-40s or above. I would say that's accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
Who had had a couple drinks, which is no excuse. I'm standing there, and she came up to me and said, "What's under that kilt?" And then she started to run her hand up my leg. I went, "I'd love to reach under there and feel." And I'm like, "Whoa." And my brother is standing next to me, and my wife is sitting about 10 feet away. And I'm like, "Oh, well, you'll never know what's up there. It's a secret, da-da-da-da." And then she started, oh, I really, it's so great. And then she kept like reaching up my skirt. She did the same thing to Cody. And then we're standing outside and another woman, this one mid to late 20s, came by twice and tried to reach up the back of my kilt. And I thought to myself, and I said this to the group, which included my wife, my sister-in-law, and Kristen Decker, who shot the video for WGN Radio. I was like, if a guy did that to a woman, we would have been in jail immediately, and rightfully so. Now, granted, I thought it was okay. You know, I was a little flattered, but not to the point where it was weird. It was like, you can't just reach up my kilt and try to grab my... She was like, I like your little pouch up front. I was like, whoa, easy. That was my sporran, my actual, you know, bag. It wasn't my pouch. It was the pouch I was wearing. But it was very weird. Right, Cody?
I didn't like it. And then the first woman was, you know, almost 20 years my senior. I didn't like that. I'm like,
no, you didn't like being violated?
No.
And then she told my brother that it looked like he had a stressful life and he needed a stress reliever.
That was...
She was obviously on the lookout for something.
She was highly inebriated, but still, a guy can't go into a bar highly inebriated and pull that on a woman.
If I'm hammered and tried to reach up a woman's skirt somewhere, I should go to jail. Now, thankfully, my wife didn't see the one outside because I said, oh, she tried to do it again. This was after the second time that the second woman tried to go up the back of my kilt. And I had never seen my wife, like, clench her fist and go, where is she? Who is it? And I was like, ooh, man, she's going to fight over me. I almost went, swoon, save me. Oh, I'm in such distress. But then I figured, I've never seen my wife fight, and I don't know how that would have gone at the fest. Plus, we were representing the station, kind of, so I didn't think going to jail was, for me or my wife, was the best move on a Saturday night. But that's just sad. So, ladies, I don't know. No means no. Can I just say that? It's an equal opportunity. Cody said no. He felt violated. And I'm not joking about it. It was very weird. All right, on the other side of the news, we're going to check in with Alex Stone. He's in Dallas covering the ambush of the police officers. We'll find out what's new down there. We'll do it after the regular news here on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Contu will be here after 8 o'clock. And she'll be answering your legal questions. So if you have a legal question, make sure you start getting them in right after 8, because usually you wait and then, oh my goodness, then it's much too late and we miss out on some of your calls. Before we talk to Alex Stone, as we await him calling, we want to say again thanks to everybody at the Irish American Heritage Center. And if you ever have a chance to see Eileen Ivers, make sure you check her out. She is wonderful. We're all still reeling from the news of the ambush in Dallas that took the lives of 5 police officers the other day. Alex Stone has been covering this situation for ABC News, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Up, oh, as we're waiting to get the connection, hold on 1 second. But some new details coming out today from the police chief and... finding out more not only about the shooter but about what happened during that standoff and some questions about the tactics that the police used to actually subdue the or kill, let's not mince words, they blew up the shooter. And so some people are wondering about that, and I know the police chief spoke on that as well. After we talk to Alex, though, we're going to talk to you about how you're dealing with this with your children, whether they're young or teenagers, how you're talking to them, and how you're approaching not only the violence that's happening in the country, but the topic of race that has come to the forefront once again. We're now joined by Alex Stone, ABC News correspondent, who is in Dallas, who's been covering the story since it happened. Alex, good to talk to you again. What new details have come out today?
Hey, Brian. Well, we've been learning quite a bit about Micah Johnson, especially in the last 24 hours or so ago or so. We know that he had an SKS rifle. It wasn't an AR-style rifle like many people had expected after all of these mass shootings that have gone on that have been some kind of variant of an AR. But also we now know that he used his own blood to write the letters RB inside the parking garage where he died and where the bomb robot went in. And police are right now trying to figure out what that stands for. They are looking through the journal that was found in his home. They also say that they found bomb-making materials, they found ammunition, they found rifles, body armor, that they think he was planning something much bigger but because of the police shootings in Minnesota and in Louisiana last week, that he decided to pull the trigger sooner and went and carried this out. But they say they don't know what he was planning, and they're trying to make sure that he doesn't have a connection to anybody else. But at this point, they don't think he was connected to anybody. They think he was working by himself, that he was angry and decided to carry this out when he did because of what happened last week. But still, they are trying to make sure of that and make sure that they know 100% that nobody else was involved.
Alex, for people who aren't familiar with firearms, what's the difference between an AR-style rifle and the SKS rifle?
Well, the SKS is a Soviet rifle, actually back from World War II. It's got a wood handle on it. It is a semi-automatic, but it's very different. It is not the modern rifle like you might expect. And we believe that he had some modifications that he did to it that may have made it more deadly and more precise. Of course, whatever he did, he was a very good shot, and he was able to take down police officers with accuracy. But he also had a handgun on him, we believe, and maybe one other weapon. But it's that SKS rifle that he was using primarily, according to investigators.
Now, there were some reports today that he had gone through some combative warrior training in Dallas. Did you hear anything more about that?
Yeah, it's just outside of Dallas. And we understand that it wasn't any kind of real combat, street combat, that it was more lower-level classes to learn self-defense. But it is a place that police train at, and they say that they often have police there, but they remember him coming there. But they say he didn't learn anything. It'd be like if your kid went to Taekwondo, that he didn't learn anything that they thought would really be useful in street combat, but he did take some lower-level self-defense classes.
Now, there was also some talk from reports from the neighbors that he was a week or so ago, they saw him doing some sort of exercises out in the yard that they found odd. But again, that was in hindsight, they're saying they seemed to find it odd.
Yeah, you know, it's in hindsight, and much like what we heard after San Bernardino with Syed Farouk and his wife, that there were things that after the fact that people said, you know, that was a little weird, but we didn't think about it at the time. So now we're starting to hear some of those, and some of them are unconfirmed. People come up, you know, you hear all kinds of stories about what they think they saw, and that they saw somebody that matched that description doing something. But a few of those are popping up. They say that at the time it didn't seem all that odd. But it's what we hear oftentimes after these types of mass shootings. Obviously, this one different in many ways, but in the mass shootings that do happen, where there are little things that after the fact they say, no, that didn't look quite right. But at the moment, they just thought, what's that guy doing? And then they moved on.
Yeah, and hindsight is always 20/20, as we know. When I spoke to you the other day, Alex, you had said that the way that the police finally killed the suspect with the robot, with the explosive, was very unusual. Now, in the last couple of days, there have been more people questioning this. The Dallas police chief came out again today and justified that. Is there been any more question from the law enforcement side in Dallas that this may have been the right move versus the wrong move, or are they sticking to, listen, we did what we had to do, and here's why?
They absolutely stick behind what they did, and they say that they made the right move sending that robot in. It had C4 explosive on it. It had a cord that they said went back to where the commanders were, and they could make the decision when to hit it and when to detonate that explosive. They said this is something that they had trained to do in a worst-case scenario, and that they had gotten to that point and they had no other options. There are some who are critical of that. We now know tonight that there were some people who were in the building connected to the parking garage, and there have been questions, well, aren't you putting them at risk, that they were locked down inside that building at El Centro College? But police are saying, no, that wasn't that big of a charge. It was enough of a charge to kill them, and they got the C4 right up there. But other than that, they say it wasn't going to collapse a building. It wasn't that powerful, but that they stand behind it. Now, it's something that other police departments likely are going to have to take a look at. They're going to have to debate, is this something that they would do in a worst-case scenario? The feds who are here have said that they're surprised that Dallas police did it, because it's something that the federal police, the different agencies, don't think that they would be able to do, that they would get the authority to do. But it did put an end to this. And even though the police were the jury and the executioner in this whole thing, folks here in Dallas seem to be okay with that. Now, outside of Dallas, there's some debate that if you go in with guns drawn and shots are fired and he fires at you and he dies that way, then that's what happens. But this is, you know what the ultimate goal is. It's to kill the suspects. But still, it's going to be a debate, and it's really just starting right now.
Well, it seems odd that we would draw the line between, as you say, if a SWAT team has a sniper and they take out a suspect, the end result is the same. It's just the method that was used is different.
Yeah, it comes down, at least those who were against it, to the intent of what you're sending in there, that if the SWAT team is going in, their intent is to capture that guy alive, and if something goes down the road, if he provokes them, he or she, that they have to fire their weapon, then that's the end result. Where the only thing a robot with a bomb on the end of it can do, and is meant to do, is to kill him, and that there's no other way out for him at that point. Now, again, folks here in Dallas, they could care less about that law. You talk to police officers, you talk to folks in the streets, they say that this thing had to end. Five police officers were dead. 11 or 12 were injured at the time. There were people down. And, you know, I got to tell you, I went to a news conference today with the woman who we heard her story at the beginning. Nobody knew who she was right away, but who shielded her son, her 15-year-old son, as she was being shot. And the most incredible stories coming from this woman. And she was telling about the moments that she had been marching and all of a sudden police were protecting her, that when she went down, there was a police officer. We believe it was the rapid transit police officer. She described him as a bigger white guy who was bald, and that he, as he was getting shot and going down, that he was yelling, "He has a gun, run! He has a gun, run!" telling her to go. And that's when she was shot and she went down. And then she said a bunch of officers jumped on her and her son, and they laid on top of them as shots were being fired and more officers were getting hit. And she made the point she had been protesting, and now the people she was protesting were saving her life, and that they were mainly all white police officers. And she said that has made her family think differently about what they were protesting.
Well, we've been watching all weekend, Alex, and we've seen, you know, the people coming to the memorial at the Dallas police stations and laying flowers and things. And we know that before this, Dallas had a great reputation between its police department and the community of transparency and communication. In the last couple of days, as you've been covering all this, have you seen the police changing it all? Does the relationship still seem to be there between the community? How's the mood?
The mood seems, well, it depends on where you are. There were a couple of protests today, and there are still the Black Lives Matter protesters who are making their voices heard, and they stand by. They say that this is not something that should stop their overall cause, that they still believe that there need to be changes and that they want their voices heard. But these protests are much smaller now, and it seems like that this community may not, in a massive sense, have that appetite to get out and protest like they did on Thursday night because of what did happen. But this is still a very hurt community. When you hear the stories of those who have been affected, and the many downtown streets are still closed down, they're going to open up some of them tomorrow, but still 12 blocks are going to be closed because it's a crime scene. Police are on edge. Last night, SWAT teams came out. Snipers on rooftops were out because of a potential threat against the police department. Then they thought they saw a suspicious person in a parking garage, and they shut down that area of the city and went in and searched it for quite some time, about an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then it turned out to be nobody was in there. So the police department very much on edge. They're back in their SWAT gear tonight for potential protests. So this is a community that's still very much hurting.
Now, you mentioned that some of the area around the crime scene is opening tomorrow. Are they giving any indication about when the rest of the area will open? I can only imagine what a time-consuming process it is to collect all the evidence in such a large area.
Yeah, and the FBI is taking part, and the ATF and everybody else. And they think maybe Wednesday is what they're looking at right now. We know the president will be here on Tuesday, but they hope to get that crime scene area opened up on Wednesday.
All right. Well, Alex, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for all the information. Have a good rest of your night.
You too. Have a great night.
Thanks, Take care. Bye-bye. That's Alex Stone. He's with ABC News. You hear him here a lot. I was had the good fortune of speaking to him on Friday. So that's what's happening. All right. Now I want to hear from you. You heard Alex. Give us the facts. What's going on in Dallas right now? But as you sit at home with your kids, whether they're little kids who you probably don't expose them to much, all the way through teenagers who have social media, who watch TV, how are you approaching this with them? How are you talking about race? How are you talking about violence? Or are you just kind of hoping they pick it up on the streets, like some other conversations you don't want to have with them. 312-981-7200. Got some advice from a couple experts, but I want to hear from you what you're doing at home. We'll talk to you on the other side. It's 720 WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. It has been quite a week, which is an understatement. In the United States, we've had civilians shot by police, police ambushed and murdered by a lone gunman in Dallas. Things are just we're protests in the streets here in Chicago. Roger, how many? What were the reports today? I know we had a lot of protests yesterday. We had people protesting it at Taste of Chicago. Today there were a couple minor ones, correct?
Yeah, very minor ones. No arrests that we see right now. Very small groups of people protesting. Again, at the Taste, but that's not on the size of yesterday at all. And some of the protests around the rest of the country have dwindled also. There,
but a lot of people arrested yesterday in Baton Rouge, over 100, Minneapolis, about 100. So there was it was tough in Los Angeles where they were trying to block off some of the highways. Same here as people last night tried to block off the expressway. So the protests continue, which they should. I've got no problem with peaceful protests. That's what this country is based on. Go ahead. You got every right to protest. And if it inconveniences us a little bit, that sucks, but that's the way it goes. You know? That's...
Well, keeping the recognition of the situation public, alive, so that we don't just try to brush it under the rug, so that we don't just say, well, that's part of life, because it's really not in any of these situations. It's really not, and there needs to be something done. Now, where do we go after the protest? How
that's the big question. And
exactly.
Are people really paying attention? And I think, unfortunately, all the events this week, I'm hoping that this is the time when people do start paying attention and listening to the protesters and seeing that there's a middle ground, because no side is completely right. No side is completely wrong, but the issue is there. And that's what I'm wondering. I saw a very interesting piece today on CNN about talking to your kids and through different ages, because there's a lot you have to talk to your kids about. Race always should be a conversation, but most people, I shouldn't say most. A lot of people don't really talk to their kids about race because either they think they don't have to or it's uncomfortable. And sometimes it forces you to confront feelings that you may not be proud of in yourself, that you try to battle on a daily basis, that you try to put aside. But I believe everybody has some sort of bias. If you allow that bias to take control, that's where you lose it. But if you recognize it and say, all right, I see it's there, how do I fight it? How do I push it back? Well, then that's what we all have to do. That's what makes us better. But the kids are out there, and the kids see this. And they talk to a number of experts, quote-unquote experts. Everybody's an expert. But people who have written books, people who have studied more than you and I, maybe studied family dynamics and psychology and things like that. And, of course, they say real little kids, just isolate them. They don't need to know. They don't need to see these images on TV. They don't need to hear that. But then as kids get older, and you probably know this, but have you had these conversations with your kids, 312-981-7200, either about race or about violence? Or if you're in the African-American community, we've been hearing a lot about this in the last few months especially. Have you been talking about to your kids about the relationship with the police? And what do you tell them? And what do you tell them pre-Dallas ambush as opposed to post-Dallas ambush? Because I would hope that the message is a little bit different. There is going to be similarities of content throughout, but maybe there's some differences. Maybe not. Say the biggest thing for your kids, whether they're, you know, 8 and 10, or whether they start, whether they're teenagers, and teenagers are the ones who are most exposed because they're out in the world with their technology. They're seeing social media. They're seeing the news. They're reading their Twitter feeds. All of this is coming in. Reassure them. Reassure the kids that you're there and you're going to do everything you can to keep them safe. But also, we can't feed our kids fairy tales. We can't tell them that everything's going to be all right and we're always going to be there. But you temper it with, we're going to try our best. And one of the things that I think was very telling in this piece, one of the experts said, and a lot of us, I think, fight against this, is to tell you, if you're scared, tell your kids you're scared and tell them why, but tell them what you're doing to combat that fear and that, you know what, it's okay to be afraid. And yes, it's okay to be wary of things, but we have to move on. And not in the trite way where you say, well, if we don't do this, the terrorists win. Yank, yank. Come on. That's a throwaway now. Because there's very real issues that we're all afraid of. And, you know, it's okay to show your kids that you're maybe a little afraid. And that goes against a lot of people's, you know, creed. Oh, I never let my kids know I'm afraid. Really? So now your kid thinks if they're afraid that they're wrong. That's a dangerous lesson to try to teach a kid, you know? So, and they also say that, you know, you've gotta expect that teens aren't gonna talk. I expect that people Cody's age aren't gonna talk. I try to ask him a question, doesn't give me any information.
Yeah, but that's cause I'm not listening to you.
You're not listening and you don't care to engage me at all.
Sure.
But that's okay. Because he knows I'm here if he does want to open up. And that's what your teenagers need to know too. That as a parent, you need to know that they may not want to talk to you right away, but somewhere out of the blue, like on Wednesday, you may be in the car with them and they'll say, hey mom, hey dad, I was thinking about this, blah, blah, blah. So they do want to hear from you. They just, well, they're teenagers and we all know how teenagers are. So they may not come to you initially to see what it is. But it's mostly about assurance and communication. And I think we all know that in the back of our minds, don't we? This is not, breaking new ground to hear this kind of thing. But it's always important when something like this happens, because our instinct is to shield our kids from this, but after a certain age, you can't shield them. They know what's out there because they're living in it. I don't remember my parents ever having a conversation with me about race. Did you ever have a conversation with your parents about race, Cody?
I don't think so, but we always did the family dinner time where you talk about lots of stuff. And
right.
You kind of learn through just talking, the way people talk about things and
that's
like
an interesting interesting thing, because I just saw another study, because you know I love to read studies.
Love studies.
That the dinner table, the fact that we as Americans don't spend as much time eating dinner together has caused some of that relationship to go away, because we did learn from sitting around the table. And sometimes it wasn't, you know, wasn't what you wanted to learn. You find out that it's like, oh, really, Dad? I didn't need to hear that. But at least you were communicating. And it was a good place where maybe you had older siblings and they thought one thing and your parents thought another thing. And there was some debate there. And you were like, oh, well, I'm starting to see two, three different angles on an issue. And it helps you form your own way of thinking, too, so that you can start, as a child and a young adult, you can start making your own decisions, because you see that, well, it's okay that everybody thinks differently. And especially at a family table, for the most part, and I'm not trying to paint a Norman Rockwell here, but for the most part, you can have disagreements and talk it out. Whereas, you know, now we know, God forbid, on social media you try to disagree with somebody.
Mm.
It's a complete nightmare.
Well, it shows a grayscale form of humanity that's not so black and white. Like, one of my grandparents would maybe say something that back in their day wasn't offensive, and today is very offensive. But if that's addressed by your parents and they say, look, Grandpa says this, that's not really okay, but it's not because he's a bad guy. As opposed to social media, you know, where it's, this person said this, he's a monster,
right.
He hates people, he's a racist, he's blah, blah, blah. You know, there's people are people.
Right, and generationally, it's very difficult to figure things out. All right, on the other side of the news, there's a new algorithm. Have you ever been on a dating site or gotten an email and you thought, this doesn't sound quite right, I wonder if this person's telling the truth? Well, there may be a way to find out if everyone is on the level. We'll talk about that on the other side. It's WGN. Who doesn't love a little Lady Gaga? Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Next hour, Karen Conti will be here. She'll be answering your legal questions, so get them in early. I know Karen was not here last week, nor were we, so you probably have a lot of legal problems built up over the last 2 weeks, especially between explosives and alcohol and other sort of 4th of July celebrations. Perhaps you, were disorderly, drunk and disorderly. Hopefully not, but maybe you were. I have never been on a dating site. Cody used to frequent them quite a bit. I don't know, Roger, if you ever did that. No, but we've all gotten emails, and we've all wondered, I wonder if these people are telling me the truth. How many times, Cody, did you, using one of these dating sites, did you find someone was lying to you?
A few times.
Just a few?
That I found out about.
Right. Oh, other times they were able to lure you in to their web of deceit?
Well, no, I don't know.
Oh, because you didn't hook up.
You don't know what you don't know.
Wow, that sounds like something from Hamilton.
Does it?
The line is, we all know what we know. Oh, anytime I can tie Hamilton in, you know I'm going to.
Yeah.
I did sang it a little yesterday to my wife, got her all upset. Anyway, there's a new algorithm that can spot lies in emails and dating sites. Right now, everybody who's ever posted a fake picture on Tinder or any of the other dating sites is like, oh, no, I hope this doesn't happen. Well, it's already happening. Researchers have created a computer program that can detect lies, be it in an email. So when the guy from whatever country emails you to tell you he has some of your money that you've inherited, you'll be able to tell if this is true or not. You know, usually the grammar is what tips me off. That and the fact that nobody in my family has money. So I know there's no way I've inherited anything, especially at some country I've never heard of. Dating profiles, visa applications, all of these, according to the researchers, all the lies can be detected from this algorithm. It was created at City University in London, and it can tell if a person is lying just by analyzing their word use, structure, and context, according to the researchers. Good news for us, bad news for serial liars. To create the algorithm, researchers compared text in tens of thousands of emails that contained lies and truthful contents. What do you think we lie about the most? How do we, what kind of words, Roger? Not that you ever lie, you're an honest man. What kind of words are used by most people who are lying, do you think?
You mean, what do they lie most about?
Well, no, what are they, what kind of words would they use and what might would they leave out? Do you
slim. Attractive.
Oh, sure. Okay. For the dating sites, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Slim, attractive, or handsome, funny, I love to listen.
those are all good dating lies.
You know.
They say that people who are lying are less likely to use personal pronouns, like I, me, and mine.
Oh.
That's how you know I'm telling the truth, because I talk about me all the time.
Well, of course.
Hence, it's the Brian Noonan Show, which would lead you to believe my name's on the title. I'm going to mention myself a little bit. But, all right, they also tend to use more adjectives, such as brilliant and sublime.
So
if it's all flowery pose, like, I know that was Cody's entire profile, was talking about himself in the third person and using a lot of flowery adjectives.
Cody would never do that.
Cody is a brilliantly sublime and wonderfully articulate, handsome muggle.
With a mellifluous voice.
Oh, wow. That is quite an adjective.
That would get me hooked.
They say the reasons for this language use, it could be that liars try to disassociate themselves from the content of a message while clouding its meaning in unnecessary description. Which is why Stephen King books take 18 pages to describe a curtain. Because he's making it all up, it's all a lie, and he uses way too many adjectives, if you ask me. So I've never gotten through a Stephen King book.
But that's I've never even read one.
No, I've tried. I've started them a couple times, and I'm like, oh my God, I get it. The wind is blowing through the window. Can we move on to chapter 3 now, please? My wife loves them. I can't get through it. Maybe I'm dim, but I don't think so. I read other thick books, leather-bound books, as Ron Burgundy would say. That's right, first editions, Cody.
Those smell real nice.
They do. I have so many books at home, you would think I lived in a library. Like
would
when
I
was homeless. Yep. Just I lay around in the stacks. I go up there with a little candle on a tray like I'm in some Victorian, like I'm in Downton Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the ladder that rides on the rail all the way around so you could reach the higher shelf?
Sure, because up on top is where I keep my tomes that I don't want the children to touch with their greasy mitts. So I climb way up to the top of my vast library, and then I have two employees that just push me on the ladder. Not to fetch books, just because I love to ride. And it's cheaper than going to Great America for me to have two servants in the house who will push me on a sliding ladder. It's phenomenal. Other clues that someone is lying include the fact that they say they have two servants in their house pushing them on a ladder. That is key to knowing someone is lying. Anytime someone puts that in a story, figure it's a falsehood.
Oh, I thought I went with that one.
Of course you did. That's because I disassociated myself from the truth.
Robert. That's right.
Even though I used the personal pronouns. That's why I'm such a good liar.
I was going to say, you were very dissociated from that.
It was amazing, wasn't it?
Just sucked me
right
in.
The people on Michigan Avenue have no idea that I'm weaving a tapestry of lies and deceit in here. They think this is, wow, this is a major market radio show. He must be telling the truth and giving us information that we need to live. Ha-ha! All right, enjoy that, tourists. Wow. Other clues that someone is lying include leaking sentences to each other so that the thought appears to be connected. I have made a career out of that.
Wait, leaking a sentence?
Linking, not leaking.
Oh, I was like, what are you leaking?
Another key to lying is mispronouncing words and not enunciating, so everyone is confused by everything that comes out of your mouth. You know, did he say he was leaking? No, I think he said he was linking. No, I think he said he wanted to go do a Linksys search.
That's a very good way to circumvent the conversation.
I do. I like how you circumvent.
It's a redirect, kind of.
Sure, it's hocus pocus dominocus, as Harold Washington used to say.
Yeah.
Let's see, where did I put that? Oh, yeah, linking sentences so that a thought appears to be connected and mirroring the sentence structure of the person they're communicating with. So if Cody were to talk only in haikus, I would mirror that and speak only in haikus.
That would get them hooked. Ooh, somebody else who speaks in haikus.
Right,
that's
and then
awesome.
I could tell them whatever I want.
Yeah.
As you can imagine, the algorithm is a little better at detecting whether someone is lying than a human being. Because, as we said, we've duped people for years. I dupe people on a regular basis. That Cody duped that woman who was trying to reach up his kilt the other day. He told her to go meet me by the dumpster. She believed him. He was gone. He never went to the dumpster. I don't know how long. She may still be there.
Except when I was looking for dinner later, and I found it there.
Did you at the dumpster?
Yeah. Hey, man, that's where you find it.
I don't want to know what you ate by the dumpster.
She eats Cheetos.
Was she still hanging out there?
Cheetos are still sanitary if they're in the bag.
Oh.
Hold on. Let's run an algorithm on Cody's last statement. See if any of that was true. People manage to spot a lie only 54% of the time, according to this research. 54%, whereas the computer lie detector detects it 70% of the time, which is good news for 30% of liars who will get away with it all the time.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
You know another way to trick people?
How?
Is by using that many numbers.
That's right.
Because I have no idea what you just said.
Well, that's part of the, again, look over here, because I'm doing it over here.
So much math.
You and I, humans, average humans, the fine people on Michigan Avenue, they can only detect a lie 54% of the time. Look at the person next to you, they're lying to you almost half the time, and you don't know it. The computer can pick up lies 70% of the time. That's almost three quarters of the time. If you're doing the math, that means 30% of the time, even the computer can't catch a lie.
Wow.
I like that.
Good news for humans robot.
Well, does that mean you have to carry around a computer with you all the time to, like, record what someone says and then analyze it?
No, I think it only works if they send you some electronic communication. I don't think I can walk around with a computer and go, here, speak into this.
Right.
And they go, ha-ha, you're lying.
We all carry our own computers. It's your phones.
Right, but this algorithm doesn't work on that. It's not voice controlled.
If there's not an app for it, then what kind of an algorithm is it?
You feed your email, and you can run like somebody's dating profile through it.
They actually have an app, and we use this a lot when I was teaching, to see which students submit a paper that's been plagiarized.
Oh, sure, because they can pull out sections of text
exactly.
And go, well, 90% of this was written by someone else.
Yeah.
And the bad news is, it was written by a kid who failed this class last year. You are triply dumb. That would actually be doubly dumb. Yeah. But I went one more level. I took it an extra level of dumb.
Yeah.
Humans, according to the researchers, are startlingly bad at consciously detecting deception. That's one of the researchers said that. This algorithm was designed to help organizations protect themselves against scam or phishing emails, which can lead to identity theft and financial loss. So, Cody, you can use it anywhere The computer is maybe compromised. Anywhere that organizations feel they could be duped, you can put it in your little your dating profiles, which I know you don't have anymore. So when it comes to messages from a contact you know, the best way to spot a lie include looking out for deviations from the normal pattern of writing, non-committal phrases such as pretty sure, maybe, and probably, which is the only way I answer a question. I never want to commit. They said, are you coming in to do your show? I said, maybe. Probably, I don't know. I'll be here,
but
I guess.
Was pretty sure you'd be here.
Well, that's, listen, pretty sure is not committed. None of us committed. Changes in tense in the middle of a story and qualifying statements such as, to be honest, and I hate to tell you. So.
Yeah, anytime someone says, to be honest.
Oh, you know they're lying.
Yeah, yeah.
There was another study that says computers have been taught to detect lies using courtroom videos. Soon it's going to be just like you said, Roger, where we can have somebody talking to our phones. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to tell if they're lying or not.
Right.
Which is going to be great for a lot of people, horrible for any guy in a bar on a weekend night. Because you know a woman at the bar is just going to go, say that to me again.
Right.
I think you got the prettiest eyes ever.
That.
Huh? No, you don't. You're a vicious, vicious liar. So there you go. That's a good news. Check your emails for lies and whatnot. Oh, my goodness. So much more to get to. What will it be? Well, we'll find out when we come back. WGN. Weekday mornings, 4 to 10. It has everything you need to know and some things you just need to see. It's WGN-TV Morning News, and it is Chicago's must-watch morning news. All right, Karen Conte will be here after 8 o'clock. She'll be answering your legal questions. Some angry young man on Michigan Avenue. Couldn't be more than 10, Cody. I didn't wave to him immediately, and he was put off. He was put off as we sit inside the Allstate Showcase studio on a sun-drenched Michigan Avenue. Obviously, a young man in from the suburbs or some other town. He's, all right. I don't know. You all right, young man? Yeah, he's, hold on one second. We'll get to this call in one second, but I got to talk to this kid. What's your name, young man?
Ethan,
where are you from?
Florida.
Florida. Oh, we talk about Florida all the time in glowing terms. Nothing stupid ever happens down there. That is a lovely place. And what do you do in Florida, Ian? It's Ian or Ethan?
Ethan,
all right. I'm sorry. Ethan, how old are you again?
10.
And what do you do down there? Go to what, sixth grade? Fifth grade? Fifth grade. What do you study down there in Florida? Anything good?
School.
School, just average school. Do you like school?
Yeah.
Is this your first time in Chicago?
Yes, sir.
Well, oh, look at he called me sir, Cody. That's the kind of respect I want from you guys on the other side of the glass. Ethan, don't grow. They never call me sir. They call me all sorts of horrible names. I appreciate the respect. So what are you doing in Chicago?
Vacation.
Vacation. What have you done so far?
Everything.
You've done everything in Chicago. There's nothing left? Did you go to Taste of Chicago?
No.
Well, see, you didn't do anything. I caught you in a lie already, Ethan. And I'm not even a computer algorithm, Cody. I got him. It didn't even take me 54% of the time I caught young Ethan in a lie.
Wow.
He has not done everything. Did you take a cruise on the river?
Yes.
All right, that's one thing. Did you go to the top of the Willis Tower to look out at the city?
Yes.
That's pretty impressive. That's two good things. Do you have any pizza?
Yes, sir.
Oh, where'd you go?
Giordano's
is good. Try Lou Malnati's. Try a lot of good pizza in town. What's your favorite food in Florida? What do you guys eat down there?
Everything.
Yeah, and manatee? Do you grill that up?
Oh.
No, you can't eat a manatee, gator. Can you?
Gators.
You eat gator? Yeah, you got to eat them before they get you, right? So how's gator taste?
Chewy.
Chewy? Is it greasy? Is it good? You don't know.
I guess so.
You just eat it because your parents tell you eat the gator, Ethan.
Yeah.
And you're a respectful young man. Good deal. Well, how long are you in town?
Till tomorrow.
Till tomorrow. Well, have a good rest of the night. I'm sorry I didn't wave to you immediately. I know that put you off a little bit. I'm doing a little couple things in here. All right, but have a good rest of your stay.
Okay.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Very welcome. That's Ethan, Cody. He's 10 years old from Florida.
Man, that was a good guest booking right there.
Listen, we didn't have to do too much.
If I knew it was that easy, I would have started actually producing your show years ago.
I am glad we didn't have any Florida news on tap. That would have shattered that young man's dreams.
Oh, man.
His home state made to look like a mockery, as it is every time we talk about Florida. I didn't want to break his heart.
Right.
Poor kid probably loves living in Florida.
Right.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know that the rest of the world laughs at it.
I think his older colleagues there. I think
his colleagues.
I think.
I like that he had colleagues.
Well, he's addressing you as sir, a very respectful
he
individual.
Did.
Yeah, I think his colleagues. I think they caught the irony there.
I'm going to go that his parents are raising him very well, feeding him gator and teaching him to respect manatees.
Oh, yeah.
And his elders, who may actually be manatees. So, all right. Yes, we have Pamela has been waiting. She wants to jump on. She is in Brookfield. Hi, Pam or Pamela.
Hi. Oh, you can call me either one. Pamela? Pam, I am. First thing I want to say is slow down. You're moving too fast.
No, listen faster,
and now,
Pam.
Look, your name's Brian, right? My brother is Brian. And your name means wolf provider, protector.
Wow.
It's a good name. Now,
I like that.
It is. That's what your name means. And you trace it all the way back. But let's not go into etymology. However, I want to say, don't we have to get back to some basics here? Because we sit, and the computer tells us that this says this and that says that, but you remember when we'd walk down the street and say hello to people, and people connect with people, and I'm not going to sing people.
I hope not.
People, but we need to, as much as we're hooked into the tech, everybody is disassociated. And I think there's a thing called discernment in a SZA. Truth, you know when you look in somebody's eyes, if they're lying. You
see,
can
but,
see
well,
the
you would
body
think
language,
that.
But a computer's going to say, well, 78% say, hey, it's a computer that a person set up.
I know, but Pamela, a lot of us, according to research, most of us are duped by people. We can't tell that they're lying to us. And maybe it's because, as you say, that we're not connecting with them as quickly,
well,
you know, or
when
as
you
much.
Say research, who, by who, they say.
Well, I mean, a number of
show. I'm saying, look, don't we all have a basic as a kid? I mean, we knew, I mean, I disagreed with my parents. Once I went to college, it was like, oh, my mother's up to this. But you knew inside you don't speak to them disrespectfully. You honor them in a certain way.
Well, sure, but
you
that
can
doesn't...
lay and yell in your pillow, but we were trained that way. Something is off here.
Well, that's, Pam, I think what we're talking about the lying, and I think you would agree that there's some people who are very good at spotting people who are lying to them, but other people can't because either we're too trusting or we're just naive.
You can't spot a lie unless you know the truth.
Right
see?
On. Right
that's what
on.
I'm trying to say. And if there's truth, there's lie. There's right, there's wrong. There's good, there's evil. But
Pam, I am going to light some incense and sit on the floor cross-legged.
Yeah. So, Brian, I appreciate your program. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Pam. I appreciate your call. Have a great night. That was deep. There's truth, there's lies.
See, you thought you booked a good guest.
Listen, who did I book?
The kid.
Oh, sure, I booked the kid. Yeah,
you booked Ethan.
And you booked Pamela.
Yeah.
No, she's making sense to a point, but and research bears this out, not just from one person, and I don't believe everything that research says either. But I do know, I, for one, have a hard time telling sometimes when people are lying. Because I want to believe in the honesty of people, as I'm sure most of us do, and some people take advantage of that. And some people are very good liars. Some people have crafted lies that we can never figure out. And sometimes we don't. And that's how all these people get scammed. Think of all the people who are falling victims to like IRS scams and email scams. It's because we want to trust. So if some algorithm can take an email where I can't look in the person's eyes and tell me, all right, there's a better than average chance that this email is a lie or this profile was hacked and now somebody that you think is your friend is sending you information that is bogus, I'll take that risk. I would rather err on the side of thinking that somebody's lying to me and having them prove that they aren't than believing them and losing everything. All right, on the other side, I don't know if you're looking for a new job, something that you may want to do, but there are very unique job that someone has, and we'll share that with you and so much more in the next half hour on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Don't forget, as soon as this show ends at 9 o'clock, we will be going live on Facebook for the first 10 minutes or so of our web-exclusive podcast that you can catch every week. Cody posts it. He posts the podcast, I think, by Wednesday or on Wednesday. So you'll get the first 10 minutes live on Facebook, and then you can hear the rest of the podcast later in the week at WGNRadio.com, and we also share the link on our Brian Noonan Show Facebook page, so you can get all of that information. All right, I also mentioned that Cody was going to be gone for 4 weeks, and people are wondering, why is he going to be gone for 4 weeks? Is he ill? Did you fire him? Are you making him serve some sort of penance for his laissez-faire attitude when it comes to everything? No, I don't think that's right. What are you doing? Where are you going? 4 weeks? That seems excessive.
Doesn't it,
Roger? 4 weeks. He's going to miss the show.
It's like major slacker.
Yeah.
I
don't know how to feel about it, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Well, is it something we've done, Cody?
Yeah, Cody, what's your deal?
Oh, it's so many things you've done. Come on. No, well, to be fair, the fourth week is the week I'll be at Gen Con.
Oh, which is a yearly, we know that, Nerdfest.
Yeah, Nerdfest. That's a yearly thing. That has been planned ahead of time.
Oh,
But the next three Sundays, I will be in Madrid, Spain.
Ah, Espana.
Espana.
With Spaniards. Will you be hanging with Spaniards?
So many Spaniards.
I hope so. I need you to report back to me if there's...
Is he going to be in the bull ring? What are you going to do for 3 weeks?
I don't know. Ask him. Don't ask me. He's right here.
I'm asking
him. What are you doing for 3 weeks in Espana?
Fighting bulls.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't believe that's
true.
I don't believe you're even going to go to a bullfight. Because I'll be honest, I don't know if I would go to a bullfight. In my younger days, I had the opportunity to go to a bullfight in Juarez, Mexico.
Really?
Yes, and I chose not to. Because as much as I want to embrace my Hemingway-esque manhood, I don't quite understand the allure of the bull. And I'm sure now matadors from all over are going to be texting me horrible things. That I don't understand the tight pants and the flag and the all of it. I don't get it.
We are big in the matador demographic.
Matadors love me until today. Yeah. When now they're going to question my huevos. They're not going to understand that I, you know, don't get it. But I don't think I would want to go to a bullfight. Do you? What are you looking at?
I hadn't thought about it, honestly. For some reason.
Now you have to think about it. Now I've put it in your head.
When I think Madrid, I think that I'm going to be very hot. And
yes.
I'm going to be exploring and immersing myself in the Spanish language.
Yeah, you know English.
I know
you
English.
You don't need to immerse yourself in English.
Clearly not that well. No. But no, my girlfriend's spending a month there, and I decided she's letting me join her for a couple weeks.
She's letting you join her.
Yeah, she's doing some research and stuff over there, and I figured, hey, you're going to be there. Wait a minute.
This is getting serious.
Sure. Taking a road trip to Lake Geneva is serious. Going overseas with a lady is very serious.
It's not necessarily that serious.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, it is. I don't go across to Indiana with my wife.
Mm. You know, yeah, but why would you bring her to Indiana?
Well, because I got to buy a lot. Obviously, the winning Mega Million tickets. That's why I got to go to Indiana.
Don't remember.
I head down to Indianapolis, go east about 50 miles, stop at a little gas station. Ooh, I wasn't supposed to come forward yet. either way, let's just say we went to Indiana, but I didn't take her because that would have been too serious.
Right.
Plus, then you'd have to let her know you actually got the winning
ticket. Exactly.
Not that you did. But
no, not that I did that I've come forward or want to come forward.
Yeah, no.
I would never come forward. But
well, I'm going to be in Madrid.
So you're going to be in Madrid for three weeks in Madrid. And what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, really 2 weeks. But, the weekends were a weekend show.
Okay,
so because of that, I'm missing.
We are. We're a weekend show, you say.
Well, in this country.
All right. Wow. Yeah. What are how we are? I want you to listen on the stream at some point and tell us how we come across in Madrid.
I will.
Play the show for Spaniards and see how they react.
You know, I did that when, remember, I went to England.
Yes.
And I called in.
Well, they
so
speak English.
So he's got to do the Spanish.
But wait, was that when we did the overnights, Roger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, see, well, that was afternoon in England.
Doesn't matter.
Well, this show airs at 1 a.m. in Spain.
You're going to be partying all day.
I was
going to
say, like, you're going to be in bed in Madrid at 1 o'clock.
I've got to turn in, honey. Games
I've been busy immersing myself in the English language all day.
All right, well, listen, at 1 a.m., I'm going to be immersing myself in a pitcher of sangria.
Right, but last time we had you call in from one of your vacations, you were stoned in Denver.
That's true.
So
I was high.
Hammered in Madrid is not going to be, you know... It's Cody's convoluted conversation.
Hammered in Madrid is the new morning team, isn't it?
No, that was the remote that we pitched when we found out you were going to try to get the entire show over there. We would call it Hammered in Madrid.
Yeah.
And they figured it would just be us drunk because the show would air from 1 in the morning. From 1 to 4.
See, I pitched them high so that we can negotiate down to Taco Bell and Wicker Park.
Right.
Margarita's a Taco Bell.
Well, we're still working on that.
I know.
And also next year, Rockford for the fireworks.
We got to do... Is it going to be a bus trip?
You know my aversion to buses, but for this, I don't... How else are we going to get there? They're not going to fly us to Rockford.
They have an
airport. We've chartered... Listen, we still don't have water. They're not going to charter a plane to get us to Rockford. They're going to... Listen, we know we couldn't spring for a water cooler. However, to make it up to you... We got you a 20-seat jet. We're going to fly you, Cody, Roger, and that leaves, 17 listeners? 16, because we have to bring one of the fine engineers. We're going to fly everybody up to Rockford. The flight will take 17 minutes. You don't get anything in the air. Just like at the studio, nothing to drink, because the plane takes off, then it lands.
Sure.
So there's no time. That's how they save a little money.
Yeah.
No flight attendant. No sky pixies giving us beverages.
No seatbelts either.
No seatbelts.
You're not even in the air long enough to buckle and unbuckle.
No, what they're actually going to do is get one of those biplanes like Snoopy flew to fight the Red Baron.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we're just going to hang on to these wings like in one of those weird Wright Brothers stunt old-timey videos. And that's how we're going to get to Rockford to watch the fireworks.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I'm excited about it. I'm sorry I have to miss so many
shows. You're going, and people, this is an exciting part. You're going to be actually working... from Spain for your day job, because they have an office in Madrid.
Yeah, I made arrangements. It's very cool. So my day job during the week is a global company, and we have an office in Madrid. And I said, well, hey, listen, I do global work.
Hey, listen.
I do global work. And I said, listen, they've been a couple marketers there have asked me to help them with stuff. So, you know, why don't I just swing by our office and meet them and work there a couple days? And they ran it by some people and said, all right, cool, that sounds good. I mean, they don't have to pay for it. I'm going to be there anyway, and then that way I get an extra weekend in Madrid.
Nice.
So, you know,
it works out.
I'm really excited about it.
I want to hear from you when you get back, and maybe if we do get some sort of either on the podcast or call in during the show, the difference in American workplace environment and Spanish workplace, because I can imagine the differences are vast. The way that the do they have the siesta in the middle of the day?
They do. My friend Catherine...
I would love to take a nap in the middle of the day.
Oh, man, me too.
So you'll get to experience that, and we'll find out why they take the siesta. You know, I'm sure they'll tell you a reason. If their work culture is more conservative, as some of our firms still are, but a lot of firms going to very casual, a workplace environment is a little more lackadaisical, a lot of people able to work from home or flex time. So I'm interested to see the differences between U.S. employers and Spanish employers.
Me too.
And I want to know if they have hot and cold running sangria in the fountains. I want to know if tapas is just everywhere. Everywhere you walk, there's small bites. People walking around with plates. Would you like a small bite? I would love a small bite. Yum. And then they move on.
I'm excited.
It should be, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Well, we'll miss you, but have a good time. And you'll be on this podcast that we do tonight.
So, yeah, we'll record a podcast tonight. I'll post it at some point this week. I'll have it scheduled. And then, over the next few weeks, depending on what I'm doing over there, I might be able to call into the program. I might be able to call in for a podcast or something.
Yeah, we'll figure something out.
You know.
We can still email. They have email in Spain, don't they?
They do.
All right. I just checked. Listen, I'm not a world traveler. I also want you to stake out some places, because that's where my daughter is going to be in the fall for a semester.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to find out where she should avoid, and if there's a convent that she could go hang out at, somewhere, you know, nice. A library, cathedrals,
convents,
museums.
High on my list.
Yeah, if you could find all those nice places. I don't want to hear about nightclubs or disco dancing. I don't know if they twerk in Spain. We'll have to find out.
I'm not sure.
I'm sure there's illicit activities.
I'm probably not going to twerk. I don't want to start an international incident.
I would love it if you would start an international incident.
I know you would.
I would absolutely love it.
I know you would.
If you made an international headline for doing something. If you do, as soon as you state your name, make sure you say producer for the Brian Noonan Show. Because we've got to tie it all together.
Sure, why not?
Sure. When they book you in Madrid.
Do a podcast from the embassy over there.
I would love to. As you flee, as you're seeking asylum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can seek asylum in your own embassy.
Yeah, that's where you go to
if you're in a different country, that's how it works. Yeah.
Again, I have not created an international incident. I have enough problems creating domestic incidents. I don't need to go overseas to a foreign land to start my incidents. I can go right down the street and here on Michigan Avenue create enough incidents to fill a book.
Brian, this show is a domestic incident.
No doubt.
Somewhat international if people are streaming it right now.
They could be streaming it.
Huh?
Maybe your lady who's in España is
could be
turning people
right
onto
now.
It.
But
yeah.
If he does it from over there, then we could be trending at the top, you see, in social media. We'd be at the top
like
of the trending list.
We want to trend with Cody's international incident.
Exactly.
So you got a lot on your plate.
You know, speaking of audio, I was at the Podcast Movement Conference Thursday and Friday.
How
and
was that?
They were talking about international adoption of podcasts. And in Spain, so they're seeing a big revolution of podcasts. And some of their more popular ones are 6 to 8 hours long.
Are you kidding?
Because there's a worker culture that there's a lot of, manufacturing jobs, and they'll listen
the
straight
entire,
all day
their whole shift?
To a 6 to 8 hour podcast.
That's right up our alley.
I'm thinking let's get in the Spanish podcast market.
How about it?
That's
we've
calling.
Already done. What was our longest podcast? Or a couple hours?
Our longest podcast was 2 hours uninterrupted, but we used to do 5 hour radio shows with very little breaks.
We can do that. All right, find out what we need to do. Find out if I need to learn Spanish, first of all.
Mm.
Or, you know, it would be good. We just get one of those translator apps. So I'll do the podcast in English, and then we'll just do it into an app and see how accurately, for 8 hours, me being mistranslated into another language.
And then we can plug it into the lie detector.
Right.
And have that be a bonus feature, but you got to pay for that.
Exactly. That's a subscription.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to see if this poorly translated 6 hour American podcast is lying to you in Spanish, you have to pay $4 a month.
I'm glad we worked this out.
$1 a week.
That's the air.
Well, this is where all the good ideas happen on the air here on WGN. All right. We had been messing around with the computer. I had the wrong page up. That's me. See, that's why I need help, because I am completely inept. Plus, I'm trying to figure out the difference between a Toreador and a Matador, because someone texted in, Boris texted in, Toreadors, man, not Matadors. And yes, I've done Pamplona. The stench of fake Hemingway is about as bad as that which one would normally expect from a mass drinking festival based on cheap red wine. So a Toreador is what we see. The Matador is, you're considered a Matador when you actually kill the bull. The Toreadors are doing the bullfighting. They're the ones with the capes, and they're out there in the, I guess I can understand the tight pants, because you don't want a bull, if I'm wearing parachute pants, that will seem perilous. As a bull comes by with his big horns, could catch on my MC Hammer parachute pants and drag me to my death. So we don't want to do that. So, I don't know. Go see one if you want, Cody. I don't know. Is there a season? Young Joey, who was Dave Flyer's producer, Joey Gelman, who will be with us. And I asked him if he prefers Joe or Joey. So don't call and go, why are you calling a grown man Joey? Because that's what he prefers to be addressed. And so I will address him as such. But he was in Spain as well. You could just nod. Joey, is there a season for bullfighting? There is. Is this the season for bullfighting? Yes. Oh, yes, yes. So now you're faced with the option. Do you think your lady friend would want to go see a bullfight?
No,
I doubt it.
No, absolutely not.
No.
Way too violent. Or potentially violent, or I don't know.
Well, I'm going to say it's going to be violent.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah.
The end, it's got to be violent at the end.
That can't be. No. Yeah, I don't. She doesn't even like pro wrestling, and that's rated PG these days.
How would she feel about a crazed woman exposing herself on the freeway?
I think she'd feel like that was a great transition, Brian.
Thank you, Cody. A woman in Las Vegas. Roger, you used to live in Las Vegas. I'm sure you saw topless women all the time.
Yeah, I actually did a news story on one that had...
On one?
Well, specifically on one that had a certain part of her body insured for $1 million.
Is that right?
Yep.
Wow. Chesty LaRue? Who was it?
No, I can't remember. This is so long ago. This is mid-70s.
And so it was. She was an entertainer on the Vegas Strip?
Well, it was just off the Strip at one of the strip clubs.
Oh, an adult club. Okay.
Yeah, an adult club. And
for $1 million?
$1 million.
It seems like a lot.
Well, it's like Betty
Grable. 500 grand each, or was it a set deal?
Well, it was the set.
The set for $1 million.
Yeah.
She didn't have a separate policy on each one.
No.
All right. Well, that makes sense.
But, yeah, that was, yeah, it was quite a 3.5 year stint of my life.
I can only imagine what it was. I've lived 3.5 years in a week in Vegas, so I don't know how one would actually live in Vegas. I know people like it there. There's no state income tax, obviously,
right.
And it's very hot. If you like the desert, it's great. If you go to other parts of Vegas, it's not. You get Hoover Dam in
they've got a springs
Nevada.
Not too far from there, and then you've
sure.
got Mount Charleston for winter skiing, and
you've
not
got,
far from there.
Pahrump, if you want to go see aliens.
I love Pahrump.
Do you really?
Yeah, I think we actually did
Pahrump?
A parade there. We did
Pahrump
a parade
is,
there.
There's nothing in Pahrump.
Yes, there is.
No, there's
nice little
not.
Town.
No, it's not. There's a Walmart, a couple cut-rate
yeah,
casinos, and some brothels.
We actually...
And Art Bell's house. That's all that's in Pahrump, Nevada.
Is that next door to Rum-Pum-Pum-Pum?
Yes, that's a... No, Rum-Pum-Pum-Pum are suburbs. They're
oh.
bedroom communities of Pahrump.
Oh,
Pahrump
right.
is the cultural hub.
No, 1978,
In 1978, there had to be 3 goats... And Art Bell's house. That's all that was in
I don't know what,
and the chicken
but there
ranch.
Was a parade, and it was a very short one. But we went out, I think it was for the 4th of July, and,
wow.
and myself and the guy I was on with at that time at that station, we went out there and did a nice little parade.
Is that where you started your run of hosting 4th of July parades that you still do to
well,
this day?
Well, there was a big gap.
Okay.
There was a big gap.
But you always
long
to get back to it.
I've done the MDA telethon. I did that out there.
Wow.
Yeah, but so the...
The host with the most. Were you Las Vegas' answer to Dean Richards?
No, not even close. Not even close.
You're running
no.
down some of the same credits.
No, I was the one that they always like went to out in the rain or something like that. You know.
Now we go to Roger Badish in Pahrump, just standing there by himself,
yeah,
tumbleweeds
right.
blowing by.
Exactly.
Three women of negotiable affection sitting on a porch in a rocking chair, heavily made up, and Art Bell's house in the background. That's all that's in Pahrump. I worked in Pahrump a couple times because I'm that kind of showbiz legend.
Yeah,
don't
I know you
yourself.
Are. You always play the big houses.
People loved me in Pahrump. By people, I meant meth addicts and women of negotiable affection. But I went, and the first time I went to Pahrump, Nevada, my buddy was a huge fan. If you don't know who Art Bell is, he used to host that overnight show where people were abducted by aliens
mm-hmm.
and things, and they would call him, and they believed they had actually been abducted by aliens. So... And he broadcast from his house, which like a bunker, somewhere mm-hmm. in Pahrump, Nevada. And my buddy goes, you're working in Pahrump, you got to find Art Bell's house. So I go look it, and on stage, I say, because I don't need to stick to an act, I said, hey, tomorrow, before I leave town, I'm going to look for Art Bell's house. Anybody know where it is? Every hand went up. Oh, yeah, we know where it is. We know exactly where Art Bell's house is. All right, tell me. So they tell me, and I drive out into the desert.
Yeah.
And I'm driving down this road, and they said, all right. And my right hand of God, they go, if you reach the chicken ranch, you went too far. Because Art Bell's house was on a road kitty corner from the chicken ranch in Pahrump, Nevada.
Uh-huh.
And there was this little, like, cinder block kind of house, a big fence around it, and antennas everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And next to it was a carport with a giant RV packed in it that had satellite dishes and things on top of there. So I'm on the cell phone with my friend. I don't know why I said cell phone. I could have just said phone. You would have inferred for yourself that it was a cellular device. I'm driving into this cul-de-sac where Art Bell's alien compound is. The phone is working great
right.
until I pull up in front of Art Bell's house,
yeah.
and then the signal goes dead. Like he's got some sort of blocking mechanism
yeah.
on the cell signal around his house. So either the black helicopters, aliens... Guys who just left the chicken ranch and got lost, he doesn't want anybody making a call from
yeah.
out in front of his house.
Yeah.
So that was it.
He was the total black ops all the way around his place. So he doesn't exist on any map.
No, he's
you
off
know?
The grid.
Well, yeah, off the grid.
Everybody's
totally.
Off the grid.
Yeah.
A woman who wishes she was off the grid because she was caught flashing another motorist and his family on a cell phone video following a car accident on Vegas. Well, now she is under arrest. She, everybody knew her face. Because it was on the news and the video went viral. She surrendered to police on Wednesday. Her name is Gina DeMarco. The arrest comes 6 days after a bizarre road rage incident. Now, I've been involved with road rage many times because the minute I get behind the wheel, I'm enraged. She was on the, she was getting on US 95 at the Flamingo off ramp. Are you familiar with that exit, Roger?
I certainly am. Sure. I used to live on Flamingo Road.
Did you really?
Yep. Well, just off it, but yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So 95 goes right, that's what cuts right through Vegas, right?
Right.
So, right there, she gets in a little fender bender with somebody. Well, she gets out of the car and she's screaming. She's cursing up and down, and then she decides to rip her shirt open. Now, I don't know why. That doesn't seem, there's no answer in the story about why she did that, but the intrepid man who was in the accident with her whipped out his cell phone. I hope that's all, and began to videotape this because his family was in the car with her. So she's going nuts. He takes the video, gives it to the police. There's a huge manhunt for her because now everybody knows because she left the scene. Police say if she had just stayed on scene and waited for the Nevada Highway Patrol to get there, she would have had an unsafe lane change ticket. That would have been all. But now she's in all sorts of legal trouble. Because they think there may have been some fraud or identity theft involved. She left a hit-and-run crash.
Indecent exposure?
Indecent exposure, and I don't know why I'm having a kind of my
brain freeze.
My brain's freezing up. Disorderly conduct.
Okay.
So, wow, why couldn't I think of those two words? So that's what's going on, but they caught her. So it's that doesn't strike me as odd. This story could have happened in Vegas or Florida.
True.
But again, now I was engulfed in road rage today. There was never a point where I thought I would get out and expose myself. I don't know how that intimidates someone. And if I'm a guy and I'm in an auto accident with a woman and she takes her shirt off, I'm not going to be intimidated by her.
Mm.
I'm going to think she's lost her mind. Because the video shows her clearly just swearing, going crazy, and then off comes the top.
Well, she was getting ready to duke it out.
I guess, but is that you got to take your shirt off to fight?
Well, it was a little distraction.
I knew a guy who had to take his shoes off to fight. Or no, had to put shoes on. He could be naked, but he had to have shoes on to fight. And he would tell stories about how, you know, he would be at a beach or something, and if he was going to fight, he had to put shoes on.
That's weird.
Yeah, he's very weird. Listen, I've met a lot of weirdos in my lifetime. Maybe I attract
You're working
them.
With a couple of them.
Yeah, right? You never know what's going on.
And by the way, technically speaking, Flamingo Road is not in Las Vegas proper.
What?
It is not in the city. Flamingo Road is actually in Paradise Valley. The entire Las Vegas Strip, starting from Sahara going south, is not the city of Las Vegas. The city of Las Vegas starts at Sahara and goes north.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's in what we call unincorporated Clark County.
Is that what we call it now?
Yes.
It seems
and
very incorporated.
Paradise Valley, and there's various different sections along the strip that are in different communities, if you want to call it that. But Paradise
Valley. I'm
going to
keep calling it Las Vegas.
Well, you go ahead and do that. It's your show. You do whatever you
want. You know what I'm also going to do?
What?
I'm going to strip Wayne Newton of the title of Mr. Las Vegas and bestow it on you. After that little education that you gave us, you are now Mr. Las Vegas. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. We are all back in the saddle after a big holiday weekend, and that means, because it's after the 8 o'clock news, Karen Conti has joined us, and she will be answering your legal questions at 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get Karen to answer your questions, so do not wait too long. How are you?
I'm doing well.
It's been a couple weeks.
That's
did you have
right.
a good holiday?
I did. Nice long weekend.
Nice.
I think we should have more holidays during the summertime. We should take all those Pulaskis and all the President's Days, and we should all put them into June and July so we have, you know, just more long weekends.
I like your idea. You're involved with the law. Can't you? You know people
I'm working
in power?
On it. I'm working on it.
Draft something, or is there some writ you can file?
I don't know.
Anything legalese that you can put out there?
I'll let you know. I'll send you the memo.
I would love to be included in that. I'll be a co-author, co-sponsor, whatever it is. Not that my opinion means anything. It has been a crazy week in the law and a tragic week in a lot of ways. I wanted to talk to you about this, and you'd sent me this story, and it's an interesting thing. I mentioned it when I was speaking with Alex Stone from ABC News earlier. Dallas police, it's widely reported now, that in order to kill this sniper who had killed five police officers, they sent in a robot that normally is used by bomb squads to go down and disrupt explosive devices. What they do is they have a small charge in a bottle of water, and they shoot the water into the device, which scatters it, rendering it neutral. Well, they used the same type of robot, but they had a small charge of C4, went in and directed an explosion that killed the suspect, which I'm all for. I think, okay, that's fine. Well, of course, as you can imagine, some people are questioning it, not questioning that something had to be done with the shooter, but they hadn't seen this type of police response before. And so now there's legal experts starting to weigh in on this and wondering if this is constitutional, what we have to do in the future. What do we have to do in the future, and what's the deal?
I'm not sure that I have the answer, but I think it's an interesting question. I, too, agree with you that this was the right thing to have happen. You can't take your chances on somebody who's doing what he's doing. I mean, he was crazy, and he was harming people.
And you've already got five cops killed down.
We can't take any chances, so I think that was the right move. However, it always brings up the question. We used it in this regard, and usually this is something that you might use, like you said, in other circumstances and in war, mm-hmm. and the rules in war are different than the rules in police enforcement.
Right.
So there are a lot of people who are concerned that this might be an issue that deals with constitutional law. What's the person's due process rights? Is it okay from a constitutional standpoint to just neutralize somebody in that circumstance? You know, I guess I don't really have a problem with it, you know, but I think it has to be looked at, and I think that we have to think about how the Constitution is going to have to be changed, or I'm sorry, I shouldn't say changed, but interpreted to deal with modern technology. And, you know, there have even been law review articles written about whether or not we have a right to have robots that are firearms, because there are people who give the opinion that under the Second Amendment that covers robots. So you know, and then I just saw a whole article. It was like a 20-page article written on that very, very issue, using compelling sources to say that we might have a right someday down the line. So
to own
robots,
killing
robots.
Robots.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again,
that's very science fiction.
These are taking things to illogical extremes, but I do think that we're going to have now law enforcement rules in place regarding the use of these things.
Well, I wonder if the interpretation is going to look at. Now, I used this example before, and I'll use it again with you. If SWAT teams employ snipers. During standoffs, there's times when the order is given, look, if you
Absolutely.
Have a clear shot, you take the guy out, which, again, I have no problem with that. I don't see the difference, I guess, except
right.
that sending in the robot is, there's no other, you're sending in the robot to kill this guy, there's no question. But if you tell the sniper when you have a shot, take it, aren't you, in fact, doing the same thing?
I agree with you. I think it's the same exact thing. And the SWAT teams are given very specific orders about not to shoot until you've exhausted all your remedies.
Right.
I mean, you know, they have rules about how long you should wait and how you try to draw these people out. But if they're going to continue to harm people or threatening to harm people, you've got to do what you've got to do.
Right.
It's the same rule. It's the same thing. I think the concern, though, is the robot just makes it easier. And it makes, I guess, I don't know how that could become unconstitutional,
right.
whereas a sniper is constitutional.
Yeah, I think after a few hours and a guy obviously not going to give up, and the fact that you've already lost this many people, okay, well, what are we? How long are we going to be patient with somebody?
No,
like
I don't
that?
Have any problem with what they did. I don't think anyone else does either.
Well, according to reports, absolutely no one in Dallas does, as you can imagine.
Right.
And I don't say that with any flippancy, because you know at that point it's like, all right, we've got to end this.
Absolutely.
We've got to get this done. Let's get to a call. You want to start
sure.
with something? All right.
Sure.
We've got, if you have a legal question, Karen Conti is here, as she is every Sunday. 312-981-7200. Let's start. Robert's got a question about a car that has been included in a bankruptcy. He is in Rockford. Hi, Robert.
Hi there.
What's your question for Karen?
I'm in a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, and I got 2 years left on it, but the car has been paid for, and it's a zero balance on the car, but they won't give me the title, the company won't give me the title until the bankruptcy is finalized, until it's done.
Interesting.
And the car is just junk sitting in my driveway. I can't have it sitting there for 2 years. And if it's still collateral, I told them. They said, well, it's considered collateral and this and that. And I said, okay, well, then I'll drop it off at your door. And they said, no, you can't do that.
That's a strange predicament to be in. Do you have a bankruptcy lawyer you can ask this question? Because I'm not sure I've ever heard of this question before.
Yeah, I do. And when I called, I got a, well, you know, we'll call and see,
yeah,
you know, if they'll release the title. And they called to see if they'd release the title, and they said, no, they're not gonna. So he said, they're not gonna.
So this is one of these things. You know what? Why don't you send me an email? Let me see. I've got a guy who does bankruptcy work, and he might be able to quickly answer this question. Maybe there's something you need to do to go to the bankruptcy court and get a court order where there is some sort of release, ordering the company to give you your title. I don't know exactly how you'd go about doing that, but send me an email at kconti@kcontilaw.com and remind me who you are, and I will do my best to get you an answer.
I appreciate it very much.
Sure, Robert.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Bye,
Robert. And give that number again.
Sure, it's kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, Wally wants to jump in. We were talking about the robot. We were talking about the police taking out the shooter in Dallas. Wally wants to jump in and has a comment on that. Hi, Wally.
Hi, guys. Yeah, you know, the thing is, with this robot going in, it's not like they sent this into some innocent guy's living room while he was watching TV. The police chief on Friday morning, said, we were negotiating with this guy, and we told him if he comes out, he's not going to be harmed. However, if he doesn't come out, we can't guarantee his safety. And they, you know, they thought that if officers went in there, that there was a chance that more officers would be shot.
Right.
I mean, I have no problem at all with the robot going in and whatever they need to do to neutralize this guy.
And I think,
go ahead.
I think
you're preaching to the choir,
yeah,
Wally.
Yeah, I
Thanks
think, Wally, we're on the same page. And the only reason that I brought up the issue at all, and I thought it might be an interesting topic to think about, is because when you have a tragic situation like this that's very urgent and emergency-based, you do things, and then sometimes people look back and go, oh, now we have to have new rules in place for these kinds of things that we didn't even think about using in this context.
Right.
And I'm not saying this was wrong or unconstitutional, because I don't think that anything, you're right. I think the sniper shot or a SWAT team coming in or doing all these things, it's the same thing. But we do now have to look at, what if this were slightly different? What if this were not as urgent or emergent as this was? And what are the rules going to be? And how does the Constitution impact those rules?
Right. And just like any, as you mentioned, every department has procedures for all sorts of events.
Sure.
And if we can, if rules need to be made, blanket rules to say, all right, this is how you do this. Okay. That doesn't mean they did the wrong thing. It's just, as you say, now moving forward. Oh, we didn't even think of that before.
I mean, to me, this can be an extremely effective.
Well, somebody texted in. Could they put gas in there in the arm instead of an explosive in some cases? And I'm sure there's all sorts of ways they can rig this robot to disperse something and knock somebody out. But this was in a ventilated parking garage, so, you know, that probably wouldn't be as effective.
And we go back to the same analysis that we do with all of the shootings and all of the, you know, the police use of force. You can use deadly force if there's deadly force being used.
Exactly.
And if there's an imminent fear of bodily harm. And in this case, because of where he was moving, he was, you know, he was shooting and then he was moving and he was in an area where they couldn't access it. I mean, this was perfectly appropriate as far as I can see.
Well, and somebody's questioning now, oh, robots that kill humans. It's not the robot does not have artificial intelligence and became self-actualized and went in and killed. This is a remote, basically a remote control car with an explosive on an arm. That's what it was.
Sure.
It, you know, we use the term robot, but
it's
if you've
weapon.
Ever seen
it's
one,
a
yeah,
weapon,
it's
not
a
person,
weapon.
Right.
Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, Karen will be answering more of your legal questions. 312-981-7200. It's the phone, it's the text, it's how you get legal help here on WGN. Hey, Cubs fans, head to Drew Losco this Sunday today to collect your 2016 Chicago Cubs Fathead sticker. It's free inside the Chicago Tribune. This week's sticker has an exclusive offer from Blue Lizard Sunscreen. Karen Conti's here. She's answering your legal questions at 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get a hold of us. Let's go to another story that is making a lot of news, and it seems to be taking on legs, like...
Yes.
Not to the same extent of the Bill Cosby trial, but more and more women are coming forward. Gretchen Carlson, former Fox News anchor, has filed a lawsuit, a sexual harassment suit, against Roger Ailes, the CEO of Fox News, and now more women are starting to come out saying, yeah, you know what, he did this to me too. I want to ask you a quick question about this, because she didn't sue Fox. She didn't file the suit against Fox News. She filed it just against Roger Ailes. Is that unusual if you're filing a sexual harassment suit that happened in the workplace to go after an individual rather than the corporation? And what does that tell you about the lawsuit?
It's interesting. It is unusual because usually you sue the employee, whether they're management or an employee, and you sue the parent company. Maybe she wants to keep good relations with Fox, and she wanted to send the message that I still like Fox. I would still be willing to work for Fox. It's just you've got a rogue president here.
Right.
So that's what I'm thinking, but technically speaking, Fox would still be responsible for the actions of Ailes, so that his contract might even say that if he ever gets sued, that Fox will indemnify him for this, you know, any lawsuit. So, you know, I don't know. We may never know the answer to that.
Right, because I know 20th Century Fox has said they're looking into it. Of course, they take it very seriously.
They
but
do.
Now
they
six
have to
more women are coming.
They
forward.
Have to investigate it because you know that's their obligation when there is ever a charge or there's ever a complaint, even an informal complaint. The employer must conduct a full investigation to make sure of these allegations, because if Fox continues to have him work there, let's just say these allegations are true. I'm just going to say that. I don't know. So everyone, you can stop calling and telling me that I'm jumping the gun. But if they are true, Fox, by keeping him there, and let's just say he does it again, then Fox has culpability for doing that. So
because they knew
they
allegedly
knew,
and then they let him stay.
Yes.
I know a lot of contracts have morals clauses. Do those extend, do those get put in, and they probably vary from contract
to
contract.
Yes, they really do.
But like, if somebody is sued, is that enough to trip that clause?
Yeah, probably not. And I don't know. I have no idea how this contract was written that he has. My guess is there's nothing. Usually it's more along the lines of the talent, because the talent are the people who are out there. You know, again, though, given the amount of money that he's probably making, there might be something in there that says that if something were to happen to him, I'll bet those provisions are being put into almost all contracts now, given what happens these days when there's, you know, this is a really interesting situation, Brian, because for anyone who thinks that sexual harassment is dead, it is not. And I see it in the workplace all the time. It's as if we're back in 1930s. You know, there are some people, and I'll say men and women, but mostly men, who still think that they can, you know, take their pants down, say the most horrific things, ask for sex in exchange for better treatment, and they do it all the time. And frankly, I'm not even sure it's about sex. I think it's about power and control and about dominance and about really being disrespectful. And for some reason, that's something that these people like to do. And if you look at the allegations of these now women who have come out, I think there's a new, like six of them.
Six more, yep.
A couple of them, one of them was done to a 16-year-old girl who was working there who had never, you know, seen a man's, you know, private parts, and he exposed himself to her. Now, again, we don't know if these things are true, but when you have six of them, and maybe by the end of this we're going to have a few more, I think this is a guy who's probably done it and has gotten away with it because he's so powerful.
Well, that's power is a great insulator, you know, so a lot of times powerful people can get away with things just because they're powerful. And again, before anybody gets their panties in a bunch, we don't know if he did it. But again, sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. And that's been proved out a number of times. And the only thing, going back to Gretchen Carlson, the only thing with the initial lawsuit that surprised me, and I bring it up again just because it really struck me, was that by suing Roger Ailes by himself, it seemed very personal rather than a workplace thing. But that's, again, that's not the case, necessarily the case.
I just think that it is very personal for her. And I think, again, she's keeping her options open and she's trying to give the message that Fox, you know, you better take care of your own here, even though he's the powerful guy, even though he's the one making the decisions. I mean, this is a very capable man. He worked for President Nixon. He worked for one of the Bushes as a media consultant. And really, I mean, he's a very intelligent, well-rounded guy. But you know, he's got this issue. And, you know, this is not something that Fox has to keep, you know, needs to keep around.
Exactly. Well, we'll see how that plays out. If any more come forward, a lot of these women have contacted Gretchen Carlson's attorney to relay their stories. And I think, do you find that this is the way a lot of these cases work?
Yes.
Because you need one person to have the courage to come forward, and then other people who, for whatever reason, didn't come forward previously are going to jump in. And I know a lot of times people are skeptical about that. They go, why didn't you come forward when it happened? Well, if you're a 16-year-old girl, or, you know, a woman who's trying to work her way up in a career, or a guy, you don't want that to be what defines you as you go forward in your career.
That's so true. And in particularly, I think it's true, not that it doesn't matter in other jobs, but when you're dealing with television, there's so few jobs available that, you know, you don't want to be burning bridges. And I'm sure the managers, these people's agents say, listen, I understand this happened. He has a reputation for doing that. But listen, if you want to work in this town, you can't be doing this. You're
right.
Going to be blackballed. He knows everybody.
Sure.
That's what people will tell you. And I will even say to people who say, I want to sue, I say, you're in a small community. Maybe they're in a community of advertising. And everyone's going to know that if you bring that lawsuit.
Right.
And you know what? There are a lot of people who aren't going to look very kindly on it. Even if they agree that maybe the guy did it, you're a troublemaker.
Right.
You know, you sue people. You sue your employer. We don't want someone like that. We don't need that trouble here. We'll just get somebody else.
See, and that makes it horrible for
you. It makes it horrible.
All right, let's take a real quick call. Joe has a question. This is unusual. We were talking about robots and drones. Joe's in Frankfurt. Hi, Joe.
Hi there. Yeah, I was thinking maybe the police chief in Dallas could have used the term drone instead of robot, because we certainly use drones to take care of our enemies or do all sorts of things. So I think the idea of drones might, I don't know if it makes it any more palatable, but it certainly is being used by a number of different organizations for information and by our own government to take out terrorist organizations as well.
All right, Joe, thanks for the call. Yeah, that's drones fly, though, and robot rolled.
And it's, so, you know, it's
semantics.
A good point. Semantics is important. But again, I think we need to just remember there's a difference between things that you can use during wartime and tools that you can use in just regular old police enforcement, because there are different considerations. In war, we're killing people. We have declared that we're at war with somebody and we're killing people, and that we have assumed that there might be some civilians that come in the line of fire.
Right.
But when it comes to law enforcement, we presume people are innocent. We have all these rules and constitutional rights. So there are a slightly different set of parameters.
Right. But still, I want to reiterate this for both of us, because
Agreed. You
know people hear what they want to hear. We both think they did exactly the right thing.
They did the right thing.
They
absolutely
did the right thing. There's no question about it. After the news, we have a question about a defaulted debt in Illinois. And if you have a question for Karen Conti, 312-981-7200, that's the phone and the text. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
Call me at 312-332-7800 or email me and give me some facts. 312, I said that already, is KConti at KContiLaw.com. I was thinking that I want to tell your listeners, if you call me, leave me the message. Tell me why you're calling. Because
yes.
A lot of times they call and leave a phone number. Tell me exactly what the issue is. Is it a safe planning matter? Is it a criminal matter? Is it traffic? Tell me a little bit about it so I can refer you to the right person, maybe, instead of calling back and forth, because I don't have a lot of time to do that. So
facts are important.
Yes. Give me the facts.
All right. Easy, Jack Webb. We got it. Just the facts. News on the other side. It's WGN. It is Sunday night on 720 WGN, and as she does every Sunday night, Karen Conti is joining me, Brian Noonan, to answer your legal questions at 312-981-7200. So if you have a legal question, get them in as soon as possible. Okay, we had a texter send us a question a little bit earlier and then clarified it. The initial question was, what is the statute of limitations on defaulted debt in Illinois? And you asked for some clarification. It was a credit card that they had defaulted on. And it turns out the credit card was defaulted on 13 years ago. People are still calling. And this texter said they were told not to answer the phone because after 5 years, it's dead. And if they answer the phone, then the time starts over again.
No.
Okay.
No, it's a credit card debt is going to be pursuant to a written agreement. So you have a written agreement that you have agreed to abide by the terms, which is to pay back the debt. So that's a 10-year statute of limitations if we're in Illinois. Okay. So 10 years comes and goes. And if you default on day one and 10 years from now, you don't pay it and they have not brought a lawsuit against you, you're free and clear.
Okay.
Okay. It doesn't start again by answering the phone. In fact, you know, you might want to write them, if you know where they are, to write them a letter and say, listen, the statute of limitations ran as of this date. Send them your documentation and say, please do not contact me anymore. We're going to consider this to be harassment. There are some laws, too, about not calling if you're, creditors and all
that
kind of stuff.
Well, because at this point, it's not the credit card company anymore. At this point, it's probably a collection agency.
Yeah, but they may not know exactly, you know, when the debt started to be incurred. Like, when did you stop paying? So send them the documentation if you have it. That would be really good. And then, you know, obviously the ball's in their court to do the right thing. You know, your remedy is to hire a lawyer and have them call or to call maybe the attorney general's office and see if there's a place where you can call to stop the harassment.
And as you've said many times, don't try to do it on the phone. Do it all in writing so that you have the documentation that you've reached out to them.
Because these people don't care. They've got bulk. They've probably got 5,000 people who they're calling.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not looking at the details. They're just trying to collect what they can.
Well, because these companies are buying debt for pennies on the dollar, and they're just buying up millions and millions of dollars in debt.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen Last Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO.
I have not.
It's a great show, but he talked about this, and he bought, I want to say, $60,000 worth of debt for almost nothing and paid off people's debts because to show how these companies are just accumulating all this debt from people, you know, from the credit card companies and things like that, and then relentlessly going after them.
Yeah.
And people should pay their debts. I'm not saying that. But everybody knows hard times fall on people, and sometimes that happens.
And I see lawyers in court who do collection work. I wouldn't want to do it myself, but they'll come to court and they'll be in one courtroom and they might have 60 files. And they've brought lawsuits for, you know, as little as $1,200. But they do it in bulk. So they every day they're processing all of these cases and they're getting judgments and they're trying to collect and garnish wages and take people's cars away. So it's a whole process and it's big business.
Now, there was an interesting case, and you said this came from a listener. A listener sent you a question about this. And it's a case in Overland Park, Kansas, which is a suburb of Kansas City. A police officer was fired for a Facebook threat that seemed to make a threat against the Black Lives Matter movement. And the listener, who's been listening to you on WGN for years and years, said, where does free speech stop and, you know, the ability to fire someone for that begin? And you found it interesting, and I do too, but I think I might have a clue. But
yeah, and the other part that she was talking about was the fact that there are people on Facebook kind of making threats, you know.
All the time.
And when does that cross over the line to become a crime? Well, the first thing we have to talk about is First Amendment. And First Amendment does not come into play unless the government takes away your right to do something. Okay? So you can say whatever you want, but if the government calls it a crime, that's when First Amendment comes into play. So if you're on Facebook, let's take the employment situation, and the police department of whatever county this is, it says, you know, listen, I don't like our police department people doing this kind of thing. This makes us look really bad, and that's not the position we want to take. And certainly this might be endangering our other police officers by saying these things.
Right.
We can fire you. There's no question that they can fire people based upon those types of things. What the language is in their contract, their collective bargaining agreement, I don't know. But certainly this is a threat of some type.
Well, let me read the post because people say, well, what if it was? So it appeared to be posted after the Dallas killings on Thursday night when the officers were killed. It was in response to a mother of one of the Black Lives Matter people who was from Dallas. And this was the post by this officer. We'll see how much her life matters soon. Better be careful leaving your info open where she can be found, the smiley face emoticon. Hold her close tonight. It'll be the last time. End quote.
I mean, that's pretty threatening.
Again,
does that rise to the level of a crime? And the answer is probably no, because...
It's not specific?
It's not specific, but that person also has to take some overt actions. So let's just say that officer got in the car and got the address and got his guns and went to the house.
Okay.
Then we have the threat, and then we have overt actions in, you know, in trying to get this done. Mm-hmm. And that would be a crime. That might be an attempted assault of some type. But again, there's no crime here necessarily, but certainly this is something that any police department would probably reprimand or fire someone for good reason.
Well, and this is... This is an extreme case, but we hear about these cases all the time from employees who post things on social media and then are shocked that if it's something negative, that their employer is like, we can't have that. You represent us. You're fired. And that seems, it would seem logical to most rational people.
It is, and I'll take it one step further. Your computer's at work. If you look at your employee handbook, many employers now make you sign something that says, these are computers that are paid for by the employer. Therefore, we can go on your computer at any time and look at anything you're doing, whether it's personal or business. There's no privacy right. There never is a privacy right when you're working on someone else's computer.
Right.
And if you're doing something, even on your break, okay, that they don't like, you can be fired. You're an employee at will.
Right.
Don't think that you have a First Amendment right to do porn during your 15-minute break, because you don't, and an employer can fire you for it.
Hear that, Cody? No porn during your break. I know you think using the company, you're not going to get tracked, that you're going to get tracked.
He's shocked.
Of course he is. This is something that comes up all the time. But people always use the First Amendment as justification for anything. And the thing, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, the thing they don't seem to understand about the First Amendment is, yes, you can say these things, but that doesn't, just because you have the freedom to say them, doesn't mean you have freedom from the repercussions of saying them.
Right.
And that's where people seem to get confused.
And the First Amendment is mostly when it comes to the government telling you can't talk. So, for instance, if you work for, this school comes up in school all the time.
Yes.
Because schools are generally, unless they're private, they're public institutions, which are there for the government. So can a school tell you you can't wear a black armband?
Mm-hmm.
And there was that case. It was a very famous First Amendment case. And because it was deemed to be a First Amendment right to show your symbolism for the Vietnam War or whatever it was, that is a First Amendment right. And the government cannot tell you not to do that. Now, if a kid wants to wear super short cut-off shorts and some obscene T-shirt that says something obscene, the courts have said, yes, the school can regulate that to keep the kids safe.
Right.
Is that a restriction in First Amendment? Yes, it is. But because these are younger people, they can certainly restrict what a person wears. So there's all these, like, thin lines between what is acceptable and what is not.
Yeah, and we see that you brought up the high schools. I think those, we get those First Amendment cases all the time. No, you can't do that. And I mean, I know theoretically that everyone has rights, but at some point when you're under 18, adults have the final word.
There was just a really interesting case. I'm not going to get all of the facts right, but I want to say it was a couple of weeks ago, and it was a girl who wrote an editorial in the school newspaper, and she used, I believe, the N-word.
Yeah.
She didn't use it in a derogatory way. She was using it to illustrate something,
right.
And she was actually told she could not graduate or go through the graduation ceremony because of what she did. And I think they may have reversed that decision.
Okay.
I don't know if she actually got to walk through or not, but that was an interesting point, because here she was just saying something, you know, in her First Amendment right.
Sure.
But she didn't mean to do it in a derogatory or offensive fashion. She was using it to illustrate, and so therefore it probably was a wrongful restriction on her First Amendment rights.
And just to reiterate, a company does not fall under the same umbrella as the government restricting your speech.
Right.
So WGA. Now, the government restricts our speech here to a certain extent. We can't swear. We can't, you know, violate community standards, whatever those are.
But if WGN said to you, Brian, I don't want you talking about the Cubs, for instance, and you did, they could fire you for it.
Sure.
No question.
Right, because they're not the government.
Right.
So, all right. So, well, people get it's funny. Whenever there's a big case, like this week, everybody was a legal expert when it came to the FBI director.
Right.
Everybody's a legal expert, just like everybody was an expert when the gorilla was shot. Everybody on the internet's an expert in everything, which I enjoy because most of us didn't go to school to be experts in any of these situations. And yet we're all...
But I'm glad, some people do get it wrong, but I'm glad people are thinking about the issues. You know?
It's good to get them talking. I just wish they'd get some facts before they speak.
Yeah, and I think, I just hope that people do enough Googling to appreciate, what is the correct analysis.
Right. Because
there's a lot of good stuff on the internet about the legal analysis for these types of issues. And it's just when you look at some of the networks that want to put a spin on something, you're going to get their spin. You're not going to get the exact perfect legal analysis.
And there's spins on every side.
On everything.
There's somebody had a quick question about credit card debt. We'll do that before we take a break. 312-981-7200. Karen Conti's here. Only a few more minutes if you want to get your legal question in. What happens in court when a suit is brought against you for a $2,000 credit card debt? I'd like to know what to expect tomorrow.
Okay, so it's your first time in court, I take it. You're going to show up in court. You're going to, maybe what you do is you step out. You're very polite to the judge, and you say, may I speak with the attorney for a little bit, and maybe I can resolve this. What you will do is you'll step out with the attorney, and you say, listen, I'd like to try to pay this debt over time. I don't want a judgment against me because you don't want a judgment because that goes on your credit report. And see if you can make a deal where you pay him a little bit up front, maybe $500, and then you pay $100 every month until it's paid off, and then maybe you enter into that agreement and that goes into a court order so that you can resolve the issue, or maybe you pay some of it off in a lump sum. If you can borrow money from your aunt, $1,600, you can cut a $400 off, see if you can make that deal. You pay it by day certain, and we're done with it.
And when you say a court order, that's different from a judgment. So if you go out in the hall and you speak to the attorney and you two come to an agreement, then the attorney, somebody still has to go talk. You still have to talk to the judge,
right? It's a slight difference, but there's language that is used. If a judgment gets entered against you, it will say judgment entered against Brian Noonan for the sum of $2,000 plus court costs.
Okay,
because you'll have to pay the court costs, and then that goes on your credit report. That'll be reported, and then it generates interest. So it's 9% interest, which is a lot of interest.
Jeez,
you can't get 9% anywhere these days, except if there's a judgment against you. So instead of putting the judgment languages, and you'll make sure that there's no judgment language. You say that Brian Noonan shall pay to credit agency the sum of $500 on or before August 1st, and thereafter every month until it's paid off.
And if you don't do that, then the judgment goes in again.
That's right.
Okay. Very nice. Let's take a quick break. Karen Conti is here for a few more minutes. 312-981-7200. That's how you get your legal question in. And get it in now on WGN. Final few minutes with Karen Conti on 720 WGN. If you have a legal question, get it in now. 312-981-7200 is the number. Kathy's in Downers Grove. She's been holding on. Hi, Kathy. You're on WGN.
Hi.
What's your question for Karen, Kathy?
This involves online dating scams. I went on to an online dating site and started corresponding with somebody, and never met the person. We were just corresponding via email and text, and he had gone out of the country for work and asked for money, which I wired him money, and he does live in the northern suburbs here and in Chicago area, and and since he's been back, trying to contact him, haven't had any luck. We did a promissory note. And
Kathy, how much was it for?
Well, it was done in increments.
Altogether?
All total, $36,000.
And is he really a person? Do you know where he is, and do you know his real name and what his address is?
Yes, and I have a picture of him.
Okay. And do you know where he works?
Through LinkedIn, yes, I do. But I mean, he's like a private contractor.
Okay.
He's associated to another company that's overseas.
I mean, and, you can take him to court. You know, you might want to hire a lawyer and have the lawyer sue for breach of contract in the county where he lives and get a judgment against him. And then you can try to garnish his wages. I mean, that's a lot of money. And it's a lot of money, but not a huge amount of money enough to hire a lawyer and have to spend a lot of money on legal fees. So you could try to do it yourself, but I would suggest on this amount of money, you might just want to get a lawyer to do it, pay that lawyer to get that judgment, and then see if you can get it collected.
What type of lawyer would I be contacting?
Probably a lawyer who does collection work, a lawyer who does breach of contract. Almost any lawyer who does litigation could do this for you. I would find, you know, if he, I'm just going to make it up, he's in DuPage County. I would call a DuPage County lawyer who's going to be close to the courthouse, who does this kind of work. Actually, why don't you give me, send me an email, and I will try to give you a couple names of some people who I might think can do this for you inexpensively.
How would Kathy get a hold of you?
You can email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com or call me at 312-332-7800.
All right. Good luck, Kathy. Hope it works out. That's it's hard because people want to be trusting. We were talking about this earlier with an algorithm that's going to be able to hopefully help figure out lies and emails and profiles and things like that. But people want to be trusting, especially when it comes to matters of the heart.
Well, and I see this a lot in families where there's a niece or a nephew who wants to borrow money from an elderly person. And listen, a promissory note doesn't give you a lot of power. It just says, oh. I mean,
an IOU, if I just write it out on a nice piece of paper and hand it to you.
I mean, if I loan you money, there's no promissory note needed. You have to pay me back if there was a tacit agreement, okay? But if it helps to have a promissory note, especially if there's interest on it, but you still have to go to court, you still have to get a judgment, you still have to serve the person with the sheriff and go through that procedure. And then after you get that judgment, you still have to collect it, which means you garnish wages, you can put a lien on their house, you can try to take away their car. But a lot of times these people don't have steady jobs, or they are a contractor maybe, and they're not working for wages, so they're working for contract dollars. There's no house to put a lien on, so you're going to be, you know, you're going to be out of luck.
Now, somebody, and I don't know.
I would say, best legal advice, don't loan money to people.
Anybody. Doesn't matter
really.
If it's your brother, your sister.
Unless you, in exchange, get a lien on their house right away. And even then, you're still going to have to wait until the house is sold or whatever. Don't do it.
Okay.
If you want to be a friend, never borrow, never lend.
Wow. Never a borrower. What was there was a Shakespeare, never a borrower or a lender
like
be.
That.
I don't remember that. A listener called, could not hang on the line, but legally they want to know, what does the word sanction mean?
Sanction in terms of law means, it's interesting because sanction can mean one thing, can mean I sanction that conduct, meaning I validate it. But in the law, if you give sanctions against an attorney or a party, it's usually meaning it's a punishment for doing something wrong. So for instance, Brian, you file a frivolous lawsuit and it has no basis in fact, it has no basis in law, and I have to spend $20,000 in defending it, I get it dismissed, I will move for sanctions against you and your attorney, and I will ask the court to sanction you in the amount of my attorney's fees. So that's kind of how you would use that term.
Ah, all right. So you're being punished.
But it's an interesting because
there's two
meanings that are sort of opposite.
Yeah.
In a way.
Well, the law is confusing, Karen.
It is.
That's why people like you have a lot of books filled with law stuff.
Well, the law should be simple. You know,
It should be simple, but it's not.
And I still see a lot of legal documents that are written by lawyers that are heretofore and whereto now comes. And I sit there and I think, why can't we all just speak in English? We can make the same point more persuasively when we're speaking in English.
Do you have to use that flowery language?
No, you don't.
Okay.
And in fact,
does it carry less if I send you just a regular old letter using
I think lawyers
language?
Think they have to do what's been done for the last 100 years. And no, there's absolutely no reason. And particularly when you're drafting a contract, you don't want it to be flowery because the more words you use, the more things can be taken out of context.
Right.
Things can be argued one way or the other. So keeping it very simple, you know, noun, verb, noun, Ernest Hemingway, just make it very, very simple.
Yeah, because they gave up wearing the powdered wigs, and yet they still want to hang on to the language.
I mean, there's still a formality in the law.
Oh,
and when
sure.
you go to court, you stand up when the judge comes in. in, and Your Honor this, and Your Honor that. But you don't need to use the big words and the words that regular people don't know, because they don't have any special meaning.
Is it a way for some attorneys to ensure their jobs?
Because if you make it
so complicated, that even, you know, there's some very intelligent people who try to read a contract and go, I have absolutely no idea what this means.
I think it's that a little bit, job security, but I also think that we are taught that we're special and we're different, so therefore we have to speak in this language. And a lot of my young lawyers will sometimes talk to my clients and say, you know, using the big words, and I'd say, okay, let's just do this again. You know, noun verb now. This is what, it's not exclusive possession of the marital home. It's like, you know, you're living in the house by yourself, okay? You know, let's just say it the way it is, because you don't get any special points by using those big words, and then you befuddle the client. And you're doing that because maybe you're a little insecure because you're young and you want to make sure people know you're a lawyer and you're smart and stuff. But that's not how you show you're smart.
And we paid a lot of money for that education.
Yeah.
You got to throw
but
it out there.
Communicating is the most important thing. It's in your business.
Yes.
And in my business, and if the client doesn't understand it or the judge doesn't understand it, what good am I?
Any big things on the legal horizon?
No. You know, it slows down a little bit in the summer. Now, and in Christmas time, I think people stop fighting.
Oh,
I do have a little trial.
Because they're vacationing?
Yeah, they're vacationing. And and it's funny because when people have a vacation, the last thing they want, they start settling things.
Yes.
It's like, I don't want to be coming back from my vacation.
Right.
Hit the ground running on Monday with a trial. So people get very reasonable.
Well, that's good.
It is good.
Going to court?
Yes, going to court all week. I've got court all week long.
Except when you're on with Steve Cochran Wednesday morning at 6:40.
That's
right. Court doesn't start that early.
Court does not start that early.
You'll be back next Sunday?
I will.
How can people get a hold of you during the week?
Call me at 312-332-7800 or email me with the facts.
All the facts.
kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, on the other side of the news, don't forget you can be listening to Rick Kogan, which will be great, but you can also see the first 10 minutes of our web-exclusive podcast live on Facebook, and then you can listen to the rest of it this week. So let's do this. We'll come back. We'll say goodbye. All right. Thank you, Cody. Have a good 4 weeks. We will miss you, but I'm sure Joy will do a wonderful job in your stead. And if he doesn't, you know, it's a radio show. It's not rocket science. He'll be fine. We'll all be fine.
He can't do worse than me.
That's true. The bar is set very low, which is beautiful. Roger, thank you. We'll talk to you again next week. Don't forget, podcast coming up on the other side. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. 9 o'clock, Roger Badish.